I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, October 17th, 2016. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for the brave men and women who sacrifice every day for our freedoms and liberties? Thank you. Please remain standing for our flag salute. Tonight we have a young man who's going to lead us in our pledge. His name is Steve Ortega. Steve is 11 years old and a sixth grade student at Grover Heights Elementary School. He enjoys science and math and likes his amazing things that they do at school, as well as the kind and loving teachers. Steve says that he likes the way people work together to make the Central Coast a better place to live, and he enjoys the beautiful Pacific Ocean. So do we. Steve would like to pursue playing soccer and being a soccer coach to kids in the future. He would also like to study science. Steve, who are you? Who's accompanying you tonight? Is it your teacher? And yeah. Family members? Any family members? Yeah. Who do you have? Yeah. Is it dad and mom?
Yeah, sister and brother.
Okay, well, don't be shy to take photos, so Steve, whenever you're ready.
So,
yes,
you ready? Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for leading us. I have a certificate for you. Now, did she tell you that the mayor was going to ask you questions? Thank you for leading us in the pledge. This young lady will take our photo. Here, why don't you hold that in front of yourself?
Can I give him?
Yeah. This is surprise, and why don't you shake all the other council members' hands, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Nice job.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Great job.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So, Donna, when you're ready, we'll have roll call, please.
Here.
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 Here. Here. Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, will you cover our closed session announcements tonight?
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, on October the 3rd, the Council convened in closed session for a public employee performance evaluation pursuant to Government Code 54957. The employee was the City Manager. We reconvened in open session with no reportable items.
Very good. Thank you, sir. We're going to move on to agenda review. The council will review the order of the agenda as presented by staff and decide if we want to make any changes to the order of the agenda. Do any members of the council wish to change the order of the agenda?
No.
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 I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
I second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we are going to proceed with the agenda as presented. I believe there are extra copies on the table at the back of the room. So we're going to move on to our ceremonial calendar this evening. This is item number one. This is a proclamation declaring October 16th through the 22nd, 2016 as Freedom from Workplace Bullies Week. Councilmember Shaw.
Thank you. Yes, I'll read the proclamation. It's declaring October 16th to 22nd, 2016 as Freedom from Workplace Bullies Week. Whereas the City of Grover Beach has an interest in promoting the social and economic well-being of its citizens, employees, and employers, and whereas that well-being depends upon the existence of healthy and productive employees working in safe and abuse-free work environments, and whereas research has documented the stress-related health consequences for individuals caused by exposure to abusive work environments, And whereas abusive work environments are costly for employers with consequences including reduced productivity, absenteeism, turnover, and injuries, and whereas protection from abusive work environments should apply to every worker and not be limited to legally protected class status based only on race, gender, color, national origin, age, or disability. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim October 16th to 22nd as Freedom from Workplace Bullies Week in the City of Grover Beach.
And Donna, do we have someone accepting this? Okay. Very good. So then we'll move on to the item number two, which is a proclamation declaring the week of October 23rd through the 31st as Red Ribbon Week.
And I get to say that about 10 times. So declaring the week of October 23rd through October 31st as Red Ribbon Week, whereas tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use and abuse represents a serious public health and safety threat in our city, our county, California, and throughout the United States, and it is important for communities, schools, and individuals throughout San Luis Obispo County to work together to eliminate the demand for these substances and to promote programs that support commitment to a healthy, drug-free lifestyle. The Red Ribbon Celebration will be observed across the United States during Red Ribbon Week, October 23rd through 31st, 2016. Parents, youth, government, business, law enforcement, schools, religious institutions, service organizations, social services, health services, media, and the general public will demonstrate their commitment to drug-free communities by wearing and displaying red ribbons during this observance. Red Ribbon Week highlights local substance abuse prevention programs that involve youth and parents yearly through local community coalitions and numerous countywide organizations, and also recognizes this year's theme, YOLO, hashtag You Only Live Once, Be Drug-Free. The City of Grover Beach further commits resources to help the success of the Red Ribbon Celebration and year-round tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention efforts. And whereas Red Ribbon Week 2016 will be highlighted by all three elementary schools in Grover Beach. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach hereby supports October 23rd through 31st, 2016 as Red Ribbon Week and encourages all citizens to participate in tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention activities, making a visible commitment to a healthy community in which to raise a generation of drug-free youth.
Very good, and I believe Commander and Acting Police Chief Tim Miller is going to accept this proclamation.
There you go, sir. Thank you so much.
Oh, you take a picture? Yeah.
Honorable Mayor and City Council members, I'd just like to take an opportunity to thank you for your support and acknowledgement of Red Ribbon Week. That was only once.
You did good.
It's the largest and oldest drug prevention program in the nation, and as you stated, next week our officers will be participating at all three elementary schools in our continued effort to help keep our children safe from drugs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I know you don't need to go very far, correct?
Correct.
Okay. This is item number three. This is the police officer recognitions. And so I just turn this back over to the acting chief, Mr. Miller.
Honorable Mayor and City Council members, it's my privilege tonight to recognize two of our officers. I would like to call up Officers Hillary Napier and Matthew Goodman. Officer Napier, you take one step forward. Officer Napier will be receiving the Life Saving Award on Monday, August 1st, 2016, at about 2 p.m., officers were dispatched to the 1400 block of Long Branch Avenue for an unresponsive male. Officer Napier arrived on scene and immediately recognized the victim was not breathing and started CPR. Officer Napier continued CPR until she was relieved by medical personnel, and the victim was transported to the Arroyo Grande Community Hospital and then later to the intensive care unit at French Hospital in San Luis Obispo. We commend Officer Napier for taking quick action that prolonged the life of the victim, and the Grover Beach Police Department hereby awards the life-saving award to Officer Hillary Napier.
Okay. Atta girl, Hillary.
Officer Goodman, take one step forward. Officer Goodman will be receiving the MAD, or Mothers Against Drunk Drivers Award. Each year, MAD recognizes the officer from each department with the most driving under the influence arrest. For 2015, Officer Goodman led the department with 13 DUI arrests. I want to thank Officer Goodman for his efforts in keeping our streets safe from drunk drivers.
Congratulations to both of the officers. Thank you very much. We'll give everybody a minute. Okay. We're going to move on to public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the community to address the council or any item within the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind we will listen to all comments but cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda. I do have one speaker request form tonight, and that's Ms. Andrea Seastrand.
I move this?
Yes.
There are so many different rules. Oh, good evening. Andrea Seastrand, resident of Grover Beach and president of the Central Coast Taxpayers Association. Just to let you know that CCTA's efforts consist of grassroots volunteers who represent the forgotten taxpayer of this county. CCTA and so many others are very concerned about public money being used to promote the Yes on Jay campaign. And I want to give quickly some examples. The four-page multicolored brochure designed, printed, and mailed to every household with a registered voter in the county. The cost, I'm told, was $45,000. And this is our tax dollars, using those tax dollars to promote the Yes on Jay campaign. And I might add, the logo of Grover Beach is on the back. Also, staff. The Slocog staff and consultant have ongoing public outreach to some 95 community organizations within this county promoting Measure J. Well, I will say they will say they're educating people on Measure J. But if you could read this with a straight face and tell me that it's not promoting Measure J, well, bridge to sell you in San Francisco. Also, they're utilizing social media, Facebook, and emails. In fact, I have an email here from a consultant who sent out, learn more about Measure J on a Saturday night at 7:30 in the evening. Now, that's really pushing it, I think. Anyway, another example is the supplemental voter information pamphlet on Measure J 16, which is the San Luis Obispo County Self-Help Local Transportation Investment Plan. I like the title, investment. I don't know what this cost, but it's 30 pages, and it was interesting to note 28 pages are all, again, promoting Measure J. And way in the back on page 28 and 30, there's a rebuttal from the Central Coast Taxpayers Association and the Cattlemen's Association. Again, I don't know what this cost because it was mailed to every registered voter. Now, as you may or may not be aware, a public records request has been made. There is definite concern about the coziness between SLOCOG and the SNJ campaign to promote the SNJ. And this includes the spending of some $231,000 of public funds to promote Measure J. I also want you to know that an FPPC complaint has been filed, and that's the Fair Political Practices Commission. And it was filed this last week by the Central Coast Taxpayers Association and the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association about the non-reporting of these public fund expenditures as campaign expenditures to shine a light on the cozy deal. And I would just say the Yes on J committee has raised so far almost $200,000, of which some 75% of those dollars come from outside the county. I guess it's time to pay to play in San Luis Obispo County. And they're doing this so they can have the possibility of obtaining those lucrative contracts if J is passed, because we're talking about $225 million as the pot of gold, all paid for by that forgotten taxpayer. And I will just say that the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association is very concerned. As you may know, if it's two-thirds vote, it's up to the people to decide if they want a tax or not. But they're very concerned of seeing the public monies getting involved, and they're just extremely concerned. And I will point out that John Chang, our treasurer, and the County Treasurers Association pointed out in a recent study that school bonds, that they're finding the yes on school bonds are being invaded, I'll use that term, by the people who want to pay to play. And I kind of will use the analogy in this situation. So I would just say that someone has to stand up for the taxpayer and call attention to these concerns. And the Central Coast taxpayer has done so. And I have the complaint here, and I'll pass it out to you. Thank you for letting me go over time. I will say, at SLOCOG, the executive director can speak in favor of this for 30 minutes, whatever, big discussions, but anybody in opposition has 3 minutes.
Yeah, I want to give you some extra time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You didn't get this.
Thank you. Hi, thank you.
No. Okay. So I didn't have any other speaker request forms, but is there anyone else that would like to speak during public comment? Please come forward, and this is where you can speak to items that are not on the agenda. Okay.
Thank you, Mayor, Council members. I'm Pam Oberkamp, and I represent the Golden West Garden Homes senior community. And last June, you put in monies to repair our park and the concrete. Nothing's been done yet. We've called in and we're working on it, is the pat answer. We were told 2 months ago that we were going to have a meeting in the park with the homeowners to give suggestions. Do we keep the benches? Do we keep the barbecue? And a few ideas and what can fit into the budget and how they want the concrete. And then I called a month later. Well, it'll be, I'll call you when we know when we're going to have the date. And it's been another month. And it just seems to be moving pretty slowly. So here we are getting close to the end of the year. And we're still in the same situation. And this began last year, when we thought we had the money, and we found out that we didn't qualify. So for us, it's been going on 2 years. So I just wanted to get things going.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Is anyone else? Let me close it and You're just letting her in, right? Okay. We're going to just, I'm going to close it to the public, bring it back to the council. And Matt, any insight on, I know we've budgeted the money, so we know that. So just a real quick update.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. We have developed a preliminary design for the maintenance improvements at Golden West Park. It was really focusing on the concrete restoration and some of the other, I think, foundational maintenance needs at the park. We're kind of finalizing that initial design, and we want to make sure that was in a good enough place before we took it on the road to have this community meeting. We also want to make sure that we can tap into some of the outside resources within the area to look at some additional landscaping. If we're going to do this improvement project, we want to do it right and to make sure that we're reflecting what we can do to help make this park improvement project work even better. So it's perhaps not just a concrete improvement here and there, but to also look at perhaps some trees and other landscaping designs to help reflect this project going forward. I'll be able to provide further information to the council once we have this design a little bit further set, and then we'll set the community meeting shortly after that.
Jeff, you have something?
Just a quick question to see what our communication outreach has been to the residents of Golden West, since obviously this is a little different than some of our other our capital improvement projects where it has a very focused group of people. So what has been our outreach to them?
We have done some targeted outreach. I think we need to do more. We need to expand our outreach efforts. And also we wanted to be mindful that the outreach is not just the area right around the park, but also perhaps a little bit wider geography to include the area from, say, 13th to over towards 4th Street, Farrell to the Pike, so that it has a wider geography within that particular area of the community. So there's more we need to do, and we will take the steps necessary to help move that forward, along with the work that we heard from the council regarding the Ramona improvements, which is another high priority for us to move forward on very shortly.
Okay.
May I?
Yes, Karen.
So, do you have some kind of an estimate when you think that design might be done, so that the folks kind of have some kind of an idea when they might be looking at a community meeting?
I'm hesitant to identify a specific date or time frame right this moment. We again do have an internal design within staff. We want to make sure that it's the right design to be able to take to the community and get feedback on before we finalize it. So what I will do is talk to Public Works and talk to Parks and Recreation, and we will redouble our efforts to get this design to a place where it's ready to go, and we'll aim to have this community meeting, I would say, over the next month or so to be able to get something in place and then build this into the construction process from there.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to make a comment. I want to be very careful because this is not on the agenda and we really can't make any decisions, but I do know that we were talking about not having the November 7th meeting and the 21st. So I hear you basically saying that there was focus only on the concrete and sidewalks, and so I would maybe encourage you to maybe we think of some sort of community input before that council meeting. I mean, I like the idea of saying let's go beyond just improvements to the sidewalks. I think the residents and the community may have some input that might prove valuable. So
that's a good point. I think okay. we can work with that time frame.
Okay, very good. Yeah, if you would like to give him that information, that'd be great. And thank you for staying engaged. We really appreciate you coming in and from time to time just kind of asking the question. No, because you obviously, you know, there's a lot of things that we're working on, streets and other items. So very good. All right. Thank you, Matt. And thank you for your comments. Let's see, where are we? We're going to move on to, we have no public hearings tonight. Let's move to the consent agenda. And this is an agenda where we take items that are routine as a group. There are, looks like, six, maybe, or is there seven items on here? Is number 10 part of consent, Matt?
No, sir, it's not.
That is not. That just looks a little, okay. So basically, there are six items. Do any members of the council want to pull any item from the consent agenda?
I'd like to pull, just for brief discussion, on item number 8 and then also item number 9.
Okay. So we're going to have some brief discussion on 8. And then number 9, I think we'll pull completely. Is everyone in agreement with that? Anyone else? No? Okay, so I do not have any speaker request forms to speak on the consent agenda, so I will look for a motion on items 4, 5, 6, 7.
I'll make that motion.
Okay, very good.
I'll second that.
And there is a motion, there is a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, item number 8, Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
And this is the reason for my brief discussion on this is, as I was out about in the community, came across a curb, which I understand is not a part of actually this project at the corner of Saratoga and Oak Park, but I had asked the question of the city manager, and I just wanted to give him an opportunity to indicate what was going to be happening moving forward. Doesn't specifically address this item, but it is kind of contained within the item of 2295-2, so they're in proximity to each other, so I wanted to give the city manager an opportunity to discuss that.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Lee, members of the council. The issue that was raised was regarding some curb and gutter work that has taken place at Oak Park in Saratoga. On some of the curb sides, there is a blunt end of the concrete section that just stops. And the concern that was raised, which is a valid concern that I share, is that it does represent a trip and fall hazard. If somebody was not seeing where they're going, they could run right into that. And it's something that needs to be rectified. I did talk to Public Works Director Ray, and this will be addressed shortly. What we'll do is we will cut the curb so that it'll go taper off at an angle and not be the blunt edge that it has now, and we'll go ahead and take care of that as part of that intersection improvement. And again, to the Mayor Pro Tem's point, this project was part of the Oak Park project, but nonetheless, we need to take care of it, and we will get that done.
And it is on both ends of the curb, so, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so for clarification, this is not part of this item specifically, because if I'm understanding correctly, was what was installed consistent with the design?
I would have to defer to Public Works Director Ray regarding the design of those particular curb ramps, but to your first question, Mayor, yes, this is not part of the project that the council is asked to accept tonight. It's part of the broader Oak Park project that is a separate.
Oh, this is true.
Product of work.
So then maybe we should discuss this later. Let's bring this back up during council communication so we don't confuse the issue that's item before us. Sound good? Because I know the same thing is at another intersection. So I have that written down as well. Anything else on that item?
Nope.
On item number 8, which is final acceptance of the 2015-2 street rehabilitation project. And Mr. Ray, do you have a list of the streets that were under this program so you can just remind the council and the community of which streets the staff has determined to have been installed in compliance with the plans and specifications?
Not specifically, but I have a map, and if I can.
Map is even better.
I might. Yeah, I think this is, I think I can put this on the overhead.
Yes, please.
Actually, if I can call the council's attention, the resolution actually references the streets that were considered as part of this particular project.
Okay.
North Fifth Street.
Go ahead and put the map up, too. So, Matt, you're talking about the resolution that is detachment one?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Good luck with that. Huh? Reduce their percentage.
That's helpful. That's not too bad. It's the light blue. No, I take that back. This is going to be challenging. It is all of the streets essentially north of Grand that are dark blue are on that list, with the exception of a handful. But that's, okay. I think you can see the map. It's. Yeah, I think I've got that correct. The streets in the, if I can use the mouse here to point. Good. The streets down below here were in the light maintenance project, not part of the project we're talking about tonight. It's primarily these streets up in this section that are dark blue.
Okay.
And you have the list in front of you. There.
So let me just read the list. How about that? Basically, this is the pavement and ancillary improvements on North 5th, North 7th, Saratoga Avenue, which would be from 8th to Oak, not quite Oak Park, but I'll just, Saratoga Avenue, North 13th from Grand to Atlantic City, South 16th Street, South 13th, and Dover Court, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, just so the community knows which streets are that staff is referring to tonight. Okay. Anybody else have any questions on this, or let me open this, see if there's anyone from the public that would like to comment on this item. Seeing that one, let me bring it back to the council, and who's brave enough to form a motion on this?
I'll go and move staff's recommendation to adopt the resolution formally accepting the 2015-2 street rehab and repair project, CIP 2295-2, authorize staff to send the notice of completion to Cal Portland Construction.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, let's just do a roll call on this, Donna.
Yes.
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 Yes, thank you, Donna. Motion carries. Let's see. So we are moving item number 9 to the end of the agenda as it was pulled from consent. Okay. So let's move on to item number 10. This is a funding request from HomeShare Slow. And Matt, are you introducing this item?
I am indeed. And just as a point of reference, I believe Councilmember Nichols will be recusing herself from this item given her role on the advisory board for HomeShare Slow.
Yes.
Okay. We will give her some time to exit the room.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, this is an item as the Grover Beach City Council working in its capacity as the successor agency to the dissolved Grover Beach Improvement Agency. What's before the council tonight is a funding request from HomeShare Slow, which is a new nonprofit organization that is seeking to start a home sharing program that links providers with an extra room in their house with, quote, seekers who are seeking affordable housing within the community. HomeShare Slow is requesting a contribution of $7,000 from the city of Grover Beach to support this program within Grover Beach. As the staff report acknowledges, the council typically considers funding requests from nonprofit organizations during the annual budget process, but the council does have the ability to fund requests anytime during the year, such as what's being requested here. I'll also note that the funding source for this particular item, should the council choose to fund this, is recommended to be from the Affordable Housing Funds as part of the successor agency, not from the city's general fund. So just wanted to call that out to you. I believe there are representatives from HomeShare SLO here tonight to speak further to their request and answer questions from the council. The staff report identifies some alternatives for the council to consider, such as adopting a resolution that allocates the requested funding from HomeShare SLO. Council could modify the resolution and provide a funding contribution of a different amount. The council could also redirect this request towards the annual budget process for the fiscal year 18 process, which would start off in the spring of 2017. So that's an alternative the council can consider as well, or to provide us alternative direction, and we go from there. So with that, that summarizes my staff report. Again, the information is in front of the council, including a request letter that was sent to the city that provides further explanation about the organization, what they're seeking to do with the funds. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Matt. Any questions of staff?
Yeah. I have a couple, so, but yeah, whatever.
Go ahead.
Oh, the funding, the $268,000, do we have other potential uses for these funds that we've been working on, or what? I mean, I know we're looking at $7,000, so do we have something in mind for the other $261,000, or where are we with that?
I would probably have to defer to Mr. Buckingham to provide some more information about other potential uses of those funds.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. The council's previously discussed the use of that funds in regards to one of your fiscal year 17 policies regarding providing affordable housing projects. So staff at some point needs to come back and get further direction from the council on what type of project that would be, but to date that's been the discussion about using those funds.
And is there I know we talked about this, but could you remind me if there's a time limit on using the funds?
No, there is not.
Okay. Okay, I think that's all I had. Thanks.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Don't go far. Sorry about that.
No.
So, since you opened up the question saying that staff needed to come back with an identification of the use of those funds, so do you have a schedule for when you might be coming back for that, would that be part of the next budget cycle, or which then leads into a larger question of beyond housing, or I'll ask that question first, and then I'll have a follow-up.
The intent is to bring it back during this fiscal year. You certainly could provide more specific direction to staff. We have right now have some other priorities that we're working on, and so admittedly that's been put to the side so we can complete medical marijuana and some other tasks that you're aware of.
Okay, and that's what I anticipated. I just wanted to make sure. Thank you for that. And then so the second question is, does this have to go through our successor agency for approval as well? So, or is this the first action of two actions, or is this the final action?
This is the final action.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Karen, you have any?
Okay. I may, for the applicant. Or.
Okay. Sounds good. Let me open this up to the public, and I have two speaker requests. One first from Ann Wyatt.
Good evening, Mayor Scholes and council members. I'm Ann Wyatt, program coordinator for HomeShare SLO, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here with you tonight and the work of council members and staff on the back end to get our requests to you tonight. And so I'd just like to mostly be here to answer questions, but a couple of notes. And so the one that has come up in regarding timing of the request, just a couple of notes there. So the reason we're coming before you now outside of this sort of standard budget process is that we're in need of startup funding. We are a new program, and our hope had been to wait until the next budget year process, but for a couple of items. One, we need some seed money to get the program going, and we need some before next June or July or whenever the normal budget process funding would come through. Secondarily, we have an opportunity to apply for a sizable grant that requires some matching, so it would be a private sector grant. So having some startup funds now to match that with a due date next week could be leveraged substantially. So there's some level of urgency there where this small amount of funding can lead to a lot more for a new program. And beyond that, we're certainly interested in talking more and going through the process as you look at how to use the remainder of this redevelopment fund. So we would certainly look forward to the opportunity to make some ask for some of the rest of that money over the next period. So we hope some allotment now wouldn't preclude some future potential. Our asks will be going to every city, all seven cities. The city of Morro Bay has already pitched in for a program, and we're going through the process with the other five cities now. But as you can imagine, it takes some time. We've just received some approval for our first county funding, so also going through the channels there, and we'll hope to get into the regular budget cycles for county money. And I have a copy of the budget available if anybody has more detailed questions. And I'd just like to point out that a new house costs, a new affordable house, upwards of $300,000 in the county to build. And our program can effectively kind of create housing by opening up rooms that aren't currently available at under $3,000 a match. We're hoping far less than that. So it's an efficient opportunity to create housing now with very little kind of delay and waiting period at a much lower cost than new housing. So we're really grateful for your support, and we hope you'll approve this funding tonight. I'm happy to answer any questions. And just as a note, our program is hosting a lunch this Wednesday, the 19th, at the Shalimar Restaurant in San Luis Obispo at 11:30. And we'd like to invite you and anyone here or listening who may be interested to join us to learn more about the program and opportunities. And we'd especially like to reach out to potential home providers. So if you know anyone in particular who may have an extra room or be looking for some extra income or companionship, we'd like to invite you to extend an invitation for the lunch. We still have a few spaces available, so you have my contact information. Anne at homeshareslow.org for anyone listening out there viewing. And we welcome some more participants at our lunch on Wednesday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anne. Don't go far. Councilmember Wright, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Actually, you answered quite a few of them. But I'm wondering about the dollar amount that you've requested. Is that just a blanket amount that you're requesting from all the different cities, or is there some kind of a formula that you've used?
Yeah, I thought that may come up. We don't have an exact formula right now. So our initial requests over the course of the coming year will be between 5,000 and 25,000 to the seven cities in the county. So there's not an exact formula, but to some degree our requests will be based on practicality. There's some level of what we might get, and there's some level of calculation based on size of city.
I see. Size of city. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So we'd expect, we'd hope for higher amounts from the city of SLO and Paso and Atascadero.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a question. You were saying you need to get an amount of seed money to get started. So what's the overall seed money it would take to get the program launched?
Yeah. We are close to launching. Our sort of current obstacle is insurance. So we're hoping our insurance policy will kick in on November 1st. That will be kind of the final substantial hurdle. And then funding. As far as funding goes, we expect first-year program costs to land around $160,000. So right now, kind of to kick off, we want to have at least $20,000 to $30,000 to start the program. One of the primary benefits of a home share program is providing matching assistance and ongoing assistance to clients. So we don't want to start without a substantial kind of buffer amount in the bank, because we don't want to make a single match that we aren't in good shape to sustain. And so that $20,000 or $30,000, which we're close to reaching, will be that sort of starting amount that we need. And then over the course of the next budget cycle, we're fairly confident that we can raise the funds we need for ramping up operation over the next 3 years. And I have more specific budget numbers, too, if the council wills.
Thank you.
Okay. Jeff?
So, and my question has to kind of do with some people will call it reporting, some people will call it celebrating successes. So from a celebrating success standpoint, for what do you anticipate doing as outreach to represent to the cities and to the county of what's being done in the program, so we can kind of track and see where the benefits of this funding is proceeding?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So in our sort of tracking procedure, we'll certainly be tracking the location of all of our matches, understanding that each of the cities and kicking in are going to want some show that the program is serving their community. So we'll certainly have a tracking, a year-over-year tracking of where we're making the matches. But I'd just say there are really kind of several measurements of success. And it gets a little bit simplistic just to measure a number of matches. So that's something we'll be bringing up as we go through the tracking procedure. The most simple and easy one to report is number of matches. But within matches, there's kind of both a sort of quantitative, I mean, the number is a quantitative, but there's a qualitative component of how each match has affected the clients. And so that gets a little more nuanced. In addition, one of the benefits of the program will be maintaining the matches that we make. So the sort of length of term could be a measure of how well the matches are working, and also how many matches we can sustain even if we didn't make them. Because one of the benefits of the program will be training. And so we may be training people that we don't actually match. And so that can be a huge benefit, even though those matches then wouldn't show up in our kind of tracking report. But whether or not HomeShare Slow makes the match or just helps sustain a match outside the program, that's a winning kind of asset to create housing in the community. So that'll be a little harder to sort of keep tidy numbers on, but we'll be looking at a way to do that. And so that may be in some kind of number of trainees or attendees at training programs or training certificates offered or something like that.
Okay. Okay, great. And then just one more question. As you're asking the cities and the county for funding, is there opportunity for private funding as well?
Yes, indeed. So we're expecting that our funding sources will be from a variety of sources. So the hope is that a third, maybe a bit more than a third, will be from government sources, the cities and the county, as I mentioned. And then we're hoping a third will be from private benefactors, members, and partner community organizations, such as home health organizations. And we're hoping a quarter and a third of program costs can be covered by fees for service. So that's certainly an important component of income and program sustainability, is that we feel that the clients should be pitching in toward the cost of the program. So that will be in the form of a first month's payment by the room providers. So instead of collecting the first month's rent, the room providers would pay that to the program. So we're expecting an average starting rent of around $650 per match. And so that would come to the program. And then if you just looked at that times 12 for the year,
That still leaves $7,200 left for the home provider that she may not have earned otherwise. And if you look at Social Security income, that may be just over $1,000 a month. That could almost double sort of provider income.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So I think you said Morro Bay has already voted to contribute. And at what level have they?
They pitched in $5,000.
Okay. Let's see. You answered my question regarding the urgency. So what is your actual budget, and was city staff provided a copy of that budget?
I don't think city staff has seen the budget. I have okay. it, so if you'd like to shoot it on an overhead, or if you want specific numbers, I can read them from it at your pleasure.
No, about just your total budget, and then I would just say maybe provide a copy to the staff.
Sure. So our budget's kind of written in a four-year term, and this first year is really just an outreach startup.
Okay.
We may or may not actually make any matches this year one. So our year one income with in-kind contributions is $62,000 estimated.
Okay.
Again, some of that's still in the asking point, but that's where we're expecting to land. And about a third of that is in-kind contributions of hourly time and okay. office and equipment and supplies. Our year two budget then jumps up to actually $203,000. And again, a substantial in-kind amount included there. So it's about $170,000. Okay. would be the cash amount. And then as we ramp up, that ramps up to a little under $300,000 by the fourth year of operation, where we would consider ourselves potentially at capacity. So we'd be going from matching in the first year a goal of 25 matches countywide, which would serve 50 clients, to a kind of fourth year goal of 75 to 100 matches a year, serving 200 clients, up okay. to 200 clients. And that's, again, the sort of simplistic matching number, because a lot of our goals will also be in terms of outreach and training, separate from making matches.
Okay. Now, I know in your letter you said there's 439 Grover Beach single-person senior households. Have you had an opportunity to have any of those folks express an interest? Has anyone signed up? Because I think you understand we're being asked to make a financial contribution. We want to. I think. I would hope the council majority want to know how does that affect those who live in Grover Beach.
Yes, I certainly understand that question and the concern you would have. So in answer, I have so far talked to one potential provider here in Grover Beach, and so she is definitely interested. Because we haven't been set with the insurance or funding, I haven't wanted to enlist providers, or we don't have a form for them to sign on the dotted line because we didn't have a program to offer them. So we're within sort of grasping reach of that in the next month with the insurance availability and this funding, which your piece would really kind of bring us in on. So with that, the one provider is who I've met with in her home
okay.
and seems like a good potential. And so really it'll depend on outreach with churches and university women and other senior groups. I just slipped program information to Pam, who is here at public comment from Golden West. So, a meeting with her in a neighborhood coffee would be a way to enlist some providers. So we would continue that outreach. Council Member Nichols has some neighbors that she believes may be interested. And we'd look to you and other community members to kind of forge those links to find providers. I wouldn't want to make any hard number promises in the first year of a program, but my goal is or hope that we could match 3 to 5 Grover Beach providers in the first year.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess I would be curious to know as you go forward, because what is your criteria, your selection criteria, I think, on both fronts, but you don't have to answer that tonight. It was just a...
Sure. And that's a little bit what we have to finalize, too. So that does go speak to another of your questions about enlisting providers and seekers, because our criteria isn't quite finalized. And one of the major sort of questions we still have is exactly what minimum income should be, especially for home seekers, because we won't be serving homeless persons directly in this program, because we need to make sure that we provide security for our home providers. Yeah. And so but we certainly want to provide for the needs of the lower income residents. So that minimum income is going to be kind of key to who we can take as far as seekers in the program.
Very good. Thank you, Anne.
May I follow up on
sure.
one of your questions? The one potential provider in Grover Beach, how did you find her or meet her? Or?
Yeah, I met her through a friend of a friend.
I see.
And so this friend is working for Wilshire's volunteer group. It's Caring Callers or Senior Peer Services. I'm sorry, I jumble up some of Wilshire's okay. community services. Mm-hmm. But she was working for one of them and has a client she likes in Grover who she thought would be a perfect candidate for a program, who suffers just all of these kind of challenges that we're talking about in theory here tonight, mm-hmm. the isolation with the inability to drive, so going days without seeing anyone or having anyone to talk to, and some financial challenge living on the edge.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an excellent idea. Central Coast Seniors might be somebody for you to check with as well.
One more time, tell me the name.
Central Coast Seniors.
And they are a group of seniors?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, we're open to all suggestions, so certainly shoot any ideas or connections that you have.
I'll email you the contact information I have.
That'll be wonderful. Okay. We'd certainly appreciate that.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ann.
Thank you.
Martin Meltz.
Mayor Scholes, members of the council and staff, thank you for considering this request. I'm a community volunteer, and I'm involved with a group who I am not speaking for. It's the Adult Services Policy Council of SLO. The reason I'm coming as a supporter of HomeShare SLO, and I became involved with them on their policy, their advisory group, rather than their board, is because when I attend meetings of the Adult Services Policy Council, who I am definitely not speaking for, regularly what comes up is, what are we doing for our senior women? And it's a major problem. And this is a program which will allow placement of women and men who are in need of housing, who might become homeless, into a situation which could be very good. And I admit to using a presentation which is, this is a match.com with counseling. Because one of the things to know about this program is that our consultant, Ann Wyatt, who is eloquent in her presentation and very knowledgeable about it, will be doing counseling of the people after they're matched. And so I think we all know that it could be a difficult situation. So the counseling after they're matched is a very important aspect of this. And the other thing is, if a match were to break up, there would also be an effort to redo matches for both the provider and the seeker. The one immediate emphasis we're looking at as an organization and supporters of the organization is to identify providers. And these were the people who would make a room available in their home. And so I think it's one of the best things we could do because of its immediacy. I don't have to talk to you. I know you've heard from me before and will again about the need for affordable housing for the most needy of our community. But this is something that can be done right away. And again, here it's an opportunity to prevent homelessness. So I do ask, as an individual, not representing any organization, for you to support this program. The only organization I'm participating in as a member of the Advisory Council of HomeShare SLO. I could try to answer any of your questions. The best person, of course, to ask is Ann. I think you know how knowledgeable she is about this. But if you do have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Great. Any questions?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Mills. I don't have any other speaker request slips, so I'm going to close it to the public, bring it back to the council. And who wants to start? Jeff, you want to?
Sure. Thank you for that. I'm supportive of the request. So it, I mean, I think it's a, obviously there's a an issue with senior situations where they become like both both speakers said, before they become homeless. It's a, I think this is an opportunity to potentially address that, and so when the time comes, I'd be supportive. I'm okay with the dollar amount at $7,000. It's of the first year's budget. That's about a 10% request. If someone has a strong feeling one way or the other for another amount, I'd be open to that as well. But if they're going to all the cities in the county at this point, a 10% request from Grover Beach doesn't sound unreasonable at this point.
Okay, Karen.
Well, I agree. I am very supportive. I think it's just a very innovative idea, although I know they're doing it elsewhere. But so I too, and I think it does further the goals of what we're trying to do and what the Successor Housing Agency is was formed for. So I would be supportive of the request as well.
Mary?
Yeah, I'm definitely supportive. Ann and I actually, I heard her presentation first at one of the HSOC meetings that I go to, and I brought up to her, we may have these redevelopment funds. Please speak to our people and our staff. So I'm glad to see that it's come full circle and that it is something that can work. And I would approve of the $7,000 now, and I would like to hear more when we do go to talk about the remainder of the funds, because it is just so much bang for the buck. When you talk about having $261,000, we might be able to build one unit versus, you know, match many people within the city. And all I've heard lately is how hard it's been for seniors and what a gap there is between affordability and actual income. So I think it's great.
Okay. So here's... Well, let me say, I'd be a lot more thrilled if you were doing this in the budget process. I'm going to say, I don't want to set a precedent, but I don't want to appear to be rigid. So it's really unfortunate that we're not having this conversation with everyone else during the budget process, and hopefully we're not setting a precedent. So let me just caution us all on that one. So I've got three, well, maybe... Let me ask, I have a question for Bruce really quickly. Bruce, I know you came back to this board. There were some CDBG funds that we got repurposed for, I think it was to help people not be evicted and also rapid rehousing. And I think the number was about $186,000. Where are we at with that?
We just received within the last 2 weeks approval from the State Housing and Community Development Department to actually use those monies. So it has been approved. There was actually a one-year amendment now to that CDBG contract, so we have until September of 2017 to spend those monies. The next step now is for the recipients of that money to go through a training process with our staff and CDBG consultant, because as they expend those monies, then they seek reimbursement from the city, and they need to make sure they're eligible. And then once they've proven that, we would provide a reimbursement.
Okay. And did that program just specify just two organizations, or was just did we just put the money in those two areas of what we determined to be need?
It ended up being three organizations, including the Exploration Station for their summer kids program. So they could use that. Okay. Was a small amount.
So no opportunity to add another. Okay. Just checking. All right. Thank you. So for me, this comes down, does the program have the potential to help those in need? And I would say yes. I guess I am a little nervous in that it's new, and I think you're coming to us and you need startup money. So that's pretty hard. I mean, obviously, you're asking us to take a chance on you. I would say safety of seniors, especially of all seniors. But, you know, if we are going to be promoting this in this community, we want to make sure that there are strict criteria about who is living with seniors who are living alone. That's a major concern I have. And then I guess I'm just thinking, while I'm supportive, I'm just thinking if Morro Bay has committed for $5,000, perhaps we should match that. I think when we have others who are somewhat new to us, we give a certain amount and we have a chance to allow them to make some progress and then report back so we can see if, in fact, it's hitting the target or if it's heading in a direction that we want to support. So I get the sense that the council majority wants to support this, and I'm okay with that. I just want to throw that out there for everyone's consideration. The last thing I will say is, I know Bruce talked about this, and there are funds that we do want to talk about an affordable housing project or a youth hostel or something that we can use those funds for. So I don't want to overpromise anyone at this time, but I do think it's a program worthy of consideration. Like I said, it would just be so much nicer to be doing this conversation during the budget process. But with that, I'm going to see if anyone on the council wants to form a motion on this item.
Well, I will. Where'd it go? I'm supportive of alternate requests, so I will actually make a motion that we modify the resolution to recommend that we approve a funding contribution up for $5,000 for Home Share Slow, and adopt the resolution allocating the funds I'm going to throw out a caveat here as well, with an addition that that the program communicate with the chief of police on any security issues.
Okay. Anyone? Is there a second?
I will second that.
Okay. There's a second. Any more discussion on the motion?
Yeah. So, what was the amount?
$5,000.
I would be more in favor of the full seven. This program is already functioning in 60 other cities nationwide. It's functioned in other, actually one of the cities near where the city manager is from, he's very familiar with this program, and it's been functioning for 20 years there. I just think for $2,000 more dollars, we'll get a lot more bang for the buck. I know we have a lot of plans for affordable housing, but I've been hearing about those plans for 2 to 3 years, and this is something we could do today that I think if it sets them up to get a matching grant, it'll make a huge difference. So I would more be in favor of the seven.
Okay.
Well, and I would just like to also say that without the benefit of the background checking and the monitoring of the matches, I would have a lot more concern than I do, but because that is built into their program, that to me I think is so well worth the cost. I was good with the $7,000 myself, but I want to see this program get started. So whatever it's going to take for us to come to a meeting of the minds.
Okay. Well, then one of my thoughts for staying with the $5,000 per the discussion from the mayor was this is a mid-year request. So I would say $5,000 through the next fiscal year cycle, and then include that in the budget process for next year. Realizing that if it's a $7,000 request at that point, then it's an opportunity. Or if it's a $10,000 request, then we can look at it at that point as well.
That is an excellent point. That is an excellent point. $5,000, and we are in October, so you're literally talking about the fiscal year ending in June, and then I thought I heard that they would come back and for another request. So I think we've got a motion. We've got a second. Let's do a roll call vote.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes. So motion carries. Let's oh, we got to get Councilmember Nichols back.
And Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Just to follow up on one point, I heard the council interest in data and tracking and being able to look at the results. And so staff will work with Home Share Slow to get that information and report it back to the council. And then as part of the budget process, we'll make sure to have that information be a key part of what's presented to the council.
Yeah, and I would say, and even in addition, when there's a report out, it would be interesting to know how many folks in the city of Grover are participating.
Okay.
So let's move on to item number 11. This is the introduction of first reading of ordinance to adopt the 2016 California Building Codes, 2015 International Property Maintenance Code, and other state mandated codes resolution establishing the findings of substantial evidence supporting local code amendments. Mr. Buckingham, you have the floor.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Staff is requesting the council consider introduction and first reading to amend the Municipal Code Article 8 Building Regulations to adopt the 2016 California Building Standards Code, the 2015 International Property Maintenance Code, and two state mandated codes for streamlining the permit process related to electrical vehicle or EV charging stations, as well as small residential rooftop solar. Just a brief background, the state does mandate that every 3 years the building instruction codes are updated for all agencies throughout the state of California. The state has adopted this code and it will become effective on January 1st, 2017. The city, in essence, codifies this California building code by amending our municipal code so it's adopted by reference. The 2016 Buildings and Standards Codes comprised of 11 different code books, and they include fire, building, residential, electrical, mechanical, plumbing, green, energy, and a few others. It's quite lengthy. The state does allow cities to make local amendments to our code if findings can be made based on geographic, topographic, and climatic conditions. Two local amendments proposed are for common driveways and fire sprinklers, and these have been included and is consistent with past council actions. A separate resolution has been prepared with the necessary findings for those local amendments as required by the state. Some other minor revisions to the code. We deleted references to fees. Previously, a lot of fee tables were included in those codes. They've been eliminated, so we don't have to make those references anymore. Regulations for sky lanterns, which the council adopted 3 years ago, that now has been incorporated into the building code. So again, no need to include that as a local amendment. Appeals section can be deleted. There's other portions of the code that address appeals as well. And lastly, we just remove some unnecessary language where appropriate to simplify things. As I mentioned, the code amendment also includes the adoption of the 2015 International Property Maintenance Code, and that's simply to replace the currently adopted 2012 version. Again, it assists primarily with code enforcement issues related to property management, and it does assist our building and fire departments when code issues do arise. In September 2014, the state adopted AB Assembly Bill 2188, which requires local agencies to adopt a permit streamlining process for small residential rooftop solar. This amendment before you tonight would formally adopt those state mandated requirements, although staff has been implementing those for the last several years. And finally, in October of 2015, the state adopted AB 1236, which requires local agencies to adopt permit streamlining for EV charging stations. So again, this amendment would formally adopt those requirements, and we would begin implementing in January, which is actually ahead of the state schedule for cities under 200,000 people. So in conclusion, the staff recommendation is contrary to what you have in your packet, adopt the resolution for local amendments first. Second, introduce the ordinance to adopt the building code amendments. And I will note with the following recommended change, there was a typo in the fire sprinkler sections, which occur three times in the code. The word capital and should be capital or to be consistent with last year's ordinance as or the ordinance that was adopted 3 years ago. So, and then finally, we would ask you that the schedule the second reading to adopt this code amendment for the November 21st council meeting. And that concludes staff's report.
Very good. Any questions of staff? Mary?
No questions.
Karen?
Other than, what was that date that you're requesting a second reading?
Because there's no first meeting in November, we're requesting at the next council meeting of November 21st.
Okay.
Thank you.
Barbara?
No questions.
Jeff?
And thank you. My question has to do with what are our building folks, whether they be inspectors or plan checkers or reviewers, what are they doing for training purposes to bring themselves up to does the city participate in any training, formal training programs?
We do not, because our contract building company, JS Pacific, who does our plan check and inspections, they will be sending their inspectors and plan checkers to code classes, and that process has already begun. And so it's their responsibility, as they do every 3 years, to familiarize their people about the changes in the codes.
Okay. And I've kind of glanced through, I know in, forget which year it was, there was a very significant code change that kind of led to a increased number of applicant submittals prior to the end of the year before the code change. Are there significant changes this year that would lend you to believe that we'll have that same consideration, or is this a it appears to be a fairly routine update?
I would say I've been told this one is more uneventful than some of the past code adoptions. We continue to see more restrictive or more energy efficiency requirements in the code. And sometimes those apply more to commercial industrial buildings than single family homes. But we continue to see this. Haven't heard anything about a real push to beat the deadline. As long as a complete application, building application is submitted prior to December 31st, they are processed under the current code. It's only those applications after the first of the year that will have to meet the new code requirements. Okay.
And you mentioned energy updates. Any significant fixture updates for water efficiency or conservation?
I can't address that level of detail.
Okay. Well, it was a shot in the dark. So
what I can tell you is every other city and county in the state of California will have the same requirements.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Very good. I don't have any questions. Is there anyone in the audience that has questions about this item? Seeing no one come forward, let me close it and bring it back to the council. Someone prepared to make a motion?
I can jump out on that limb again if you like. I'll make a recommendation and move that we, one, introduce the ordinance and amend the Grover Beach Municipal Code Article 8 building regulations to adopt the 2006 California Building Codes, the 2015 International Property Maintenance Code, and expedited permit processing for residential rooftop solar and electrical vehicle charging stations, and two, adopt the resolution setting forth the findings and substantial evidence required by the California Health and Safety Code to support local code amendments, and three, request that we schedule the second hearing and adoption at the next city council meeting.
Now that's a motion.
Yeah, I would second that, although I think we wanted to adopt the resolution first.
Correct.
Then
okay, so city
then
at three.
Three will become one.
Technically, since this is your first read, you're not doing an actual adoption, but in the context of your second reading, I would definitely adopt the resolution first, but for purposes of tonight, I'd follow the order of your second reading, adopt the resolution first, and then the first reading of the ordinance itself.
So we're clear if we move forward with the motion and
you're okay with
made
it
with the second.
Yeah.
Very good. Roll call. I'm sorry. Miriam?
He said 2006. I think you meant 2016.
Yes, I did.
Living in the past.
Is the second okay with that amendment?
I knew what he meant.
Okay. We're all clear on the dates, right?
We are.
Thank you, Mayor. Roll call.
Jennifer Hill?
Yes.
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 Yes. Motion carries. Okay, we have a pulled consent agenda item. And so I believe at this point...
Mr. Mayor, actually, yes. We have item number 12.
Oh, we do have 12.
And
I'm rushing all of a sudden.
Actually, just as Mr. Ray is approaching the computer, I'll just say a few words. What's before the council tonight is identification of streets for the 2017 street rehab and repair project. As Greg will share in just a moment, we've done approximately 20% of the streets across Grover Beach thus far with the Measure K-14 projects. The council identified another 10 streets that are currently under design. And this item tonight is for the council to weigh in on what's next, helping identify some additional streets that are part of the 2017 street package so that we can work with our team to help identify that list and come back to the council early 2017. Staff can share some thoughts and insights from the technical standpoint, but this is really about the council having an opportunity to provide your insights about what you see as some obvious next streets to include in this next package going forward. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Ray.
Thank you, City Manager Bronson, Honorable Mayor and City Council, Public Works Director, City Engineer Greg Ray. As City Manager has just introduced the item, it involves a selection of streets for the next rehabilitation and repair project. And I've prepared a board for you that hopefully will be helpful. We've been having some challenges with trying to see all the city streets on one display, so hopefully this will help a little bit, and I'd be happy to move it closer for the discussion if that's appropriate, but I think hopefully for now it could show on TV if it needed to. So with that said, first of all, of course, in 2014, voters approved Measure K-14, which provided up to $48 million for street repairs. And in the first three phases, the city has completed 84 city blocks. That's just about 7 miles of city streets, and includes 20% of all the local streets in the city. The work also included reconstruction or modifications to ADA ramps. It included some sidewalk infill and construction of new water lines in certain locations and certain water facilities. There's an attachment I will show you, which out of this to do it. As you saw the map earlier, and I believe you have a revised attachment with your staff report that was distributed later to you, but that'll be perfect. I can kind of scroll down and show you. So this map shows all the streets that were completed in the first three phases of the Measure K-14 bond-funded project. I would be happy to read a list to you if requested, now that I'm prepared with a list. But I can just simply scroll through the map. And as you can see, the first three phases have developed quite a few, completed quite a few of the streets. I mentioned 20% of all the local residential streets. And it's beginning to take shape in terms of having some orderliness to it. Also shown in light blue are the projects that are coming your way. They're currently in design. And those are some fairly significant length of streets. So I scroll down, you'll see, again, that there's areas, though, that remain to be filled in. And certainly we'll talk about that more as I move through the staff report. So I'd be happy to show this at any time if it helps council in continuing with the discussion. And as I mentioned, the light blue streets shown on that map are the projects that council approved on September 19th for design. That is the next phase that will go into construction. That includes sections of 3rd Street, almost the entire length of Long Branch Avenue and Mentone, Newport Avenue, North 16th Street, South 8th Street, South 13th Street, Stinson Court, pretty good list of streets, And also included in that design will be narrowing concepts for both Long Branch Avenue and Newport. Previous direction from City Council regarding street selection has been to use a blended approach. And that blended approach followed some general guidelines that included selecting 30% of the project streets based on community priorities as identified by council, selecting approximately 10% of those streets that were in need of light maintenance, and selecting approximately 60% of the streets that were at what we call the critical PCI condition. And additional council direction included completing entire streets versus just individual blocks scattered throughout town, and also to reduce the width of wide streets under certain conditions, and of course to continue to seek opportunities to partner with property owners for completion of their frontage improvements. With staff currently in design on the list of streets that I just mentioned, now is a great opportunity, I believe, to begin considering streets to be funded by the next bond issue, which is anticipated to be in 2017. So this evening, staff is seeking direction on street selection. And to assist council in starting that conversation this evening, staff has identified a number of options. These clearly aren't the only options available, but just some assistance to council and some ideas that staff had in front of them. Those would be for council to continue to identify high priority streets. I might mention that the project currently in design captures 100% of the previously identified high priority streets. So we may want to consider a lower level of priority as we move forward, that we identified the highest priority, and now there could be a second level of priority identified. Certainly, council could identify areas of special focus, as actually council has done a little bit in the past, and that would be, you know, we need to make sure we're capturing streets west of 4th Street, and there could also be other areas where we need to make sure that we're getting some attention to. Of course, council could consider directing staff to start moving toward a process of more orderly infill. And so I think if you, looking back at your attachment one, you might see that you're starting to see sort of a pattern of northwest and, or north, south, and east-west streets develop. And I think that could be built on so that we have sort of a beginning to develop sort of every other street might make sense as we begin to fill in. And then the next process moving forward, maybe the next 4 or 5 years or so down the road, is we begin filling those in. So that's mm-hmm. that sort of north, south, east, west idea. At one point in time, staff had presented to council the idea of districts. The city seems to divide up neatly into about 5 districts, and that's a process that City of San Luis Obispo, as a matter of fact, uses, wherein the council has directed their staff to address all the needs, maintenance, to through complete rehabilitation in the city one district at a time. It's a nice approach in that it does provide residents the security of knowing when their street will be done. My district is coming up in so many years, and then when that district is completed, of course, I'm through with you and you don't need to bother me again for a certain period of years. So it actually works out pretty well. And then, of course, back to the idea of the critical PCI, and just to remind council that that is a reference to streets in varying conditions. If you sort of look at this map behind me, and it shows a number of colors, a street that's actually in relatively good condition could be approaching a critical PCI where, say, a slurry seal would extend the life of that pavement for 5 years, whereas if you didn't apply the slurry seal a year or two later, you may need to do a grind and overlay at a much higher cost. And if I can remind council on that process a little bit, it's sort of like painting your house. It's been a tough concept to understand, but if you paint your house when it's new, and let's say it has wood siding, you paint your house and you simply let the paint deteriorate for a few years, and you do a light sanding and paint it again, you get, however the warranty of the paint is, maybe 5 to 10 more years out of it. But if you let that paint deteriorate to the point where it's peeling, you have to now remove all that peeling paint, and you pay a guy to prep that work, and it's quite a bit more expensive just to repaint your house. If, however, you let it continue even further to the point where there's deterioration of the wood siding underneath, now you have to hire a carpenter to come in and replace all that wood siding that's deteriorated, then prep it for paint, and then finally paint it. As you can see, in the long run, it would have been much cheaper just to paint it every few years before the paint begins to peel. Well, that's a similar process with catching streets at their critical PCI. You don't want a street to jump to that next more expensive level. And, of course, the map behind me, and I believe you have a late attachment to your staff report, attachment 2, that shows the current condition of all the streets in the city. And they are color-coded using the sort of scale of green is good and red is bad, and graduating between that, orange is slightly better, pink is slightly better than, or I'm sorry, pink is slightly better, orange is slightly better than that, blue is, or yellow is slightly better than that, blue is even better still, and green is the best of all. So luckily on the map we see a lot of green. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to return to council in 2017 with a proposed list of street improvements for approval. And other considerations that might be addressed at that time would include the need for water and sewer upgrades, the opportunities for sidewalk infill, opportunities to enhance bike and pedestrian safety, and of course, constraints or opportunities as they relate to city funding. Also included in this item tonight, staff has expressed interest in developing alternative methods of consultant selection. And the sort of standard and current process that staff is utilizing in selecting, in particular, design consultants is what's called the Statement of Qualifications, or SOQ, and Request for Proposals process. It's a combination process wherein staff requests a firm to supply all the qualifications of any personnel that might be assigned to the project, and then to develop a proposal that identifies ideas related to the project in particular and how they would go about prosecuting their design and any unique ideas that they may have. This process has some advantages. One, it allows staff to identify and explore very specific project scopes, very individualized project scopes. It allows staff to evaluate a firm's or a team of consulting firms' specific project experience. It does have the advantage that typically it does involve a team of consultants on a more complex project. And as a result, the primary firm, the primary consultant, manages the team of consultants, which is less time-consuming and less of a burden on staff resources. But the process, as council's probably well aware, is somewhat time-consuming. It could be several months between the time we identify a scope of work to actually selecting and getting a consultant off and running. And I think this process, as typically used in other cities and also here, is certainly better suited to larger, more complex projects that have maybe a handful of unique design specialties involved. Staff has actually currently developed an alternative process for selection of construction management firms. It's a slightly shorter process. It does cut about maybe a month out of the process at best. But it's basically developing a short list of qualified firms. We no longer need to see their statements of qualification. If we review them in advance and council approves a list of qualified firms for certain types of work, in this case we came to council for a qualified list of construction management consultants. And this process has the advantage that there is no advertising needed. That's usually about a month of time required for advertising. It allows that, again, the consultants do not have to deliver statements of qualification, so there's actually a lower cost to the consultant, and we don't have to re-review statements of qualification. The process is certainly less time-consuming, but it is ideally suited to smaller or less complex types of consulting work. And in this case, we addressed construction management, which is a fairly narrow band of specialty, if you will. Another option a council might want to consider would be what's called an on-call consultant list. And typically what staff would do and what cities have done is identify specialties in consulting. In this case, if we were talking about design, for example, of the street projects, we might identify specialties that include simply design of pavement. We might identify a specialty that includes design of ADA and handicap facilities or sidewalk facilities. We might also identify specialties such as water line improvements or sewer storm drain improvements. But typically, cities have developed on-call lists for each specialty. And then once approved, staff and the city would enter into contracts with these consultants. They would have a pre-approved contract, and they'd have pre-approved hourly rates. And then when a project is ready for design or a particular consultant process is ready, you can simply directly select from the list. You already have a contract. You already have an hourly rate. All you're really looking to the consultant for is an estimate of their consulting costs. Clearly, this is considerably less time-consuming, and in staff's opinion, is ideally suited to small projects that have very few specialties included, maybe one or two specialties. One final alternative council may wish to consider would be to simply break larger projects up into smaller parts or specialties. And this sort of pairs with the previous idea of an on-call consultant selection list. Certainly, you could break up a project into individual specialties, or you could simply do projects sort of in a phased approach where you address, say, all the sewer and water lines first as one specialty, then come in behind that with a different set of consultants to design and construct the paving and the handicap ramps. Certainly, this allows for more firms to be involved in the process. But, however, in staff's opinion, it would significantly increase the demand for staff resources, as in this case it would be staff that would be performing all of the coordination between a larger number of design consultants, and, of course, you'd have more projects out to bid and in construction management and capital project management at once. So with that, staff is seeking a direction on one or more of these alternate selection consultant selection processes to incorporate into the 2017 street rehabilitation project, most specifically for design, but also potentially for construction management. And or an option would be that council or the staff could return to council with more information on one or more of these alternatives if so desired. So for alternatives this evening, staff has identified the following alternatives, and that is the council could provide direction on street selection for the 2017 bond issue, as well as alternative consultant selection processes, and or council could provide additional direction to staff. And looking at the fiscal impact, of course, this action tonight doesn't have a specific fiscal impact, but it's uncertain the size of the next project. So in some of these consultant selection ideas, for example, the scope of the project is clearly dependent on the size and complexity. But staff or council had previously approved bonds in the amounts of $5 million and $8 million. You'll see in your staff report that it's likely we won't use the entire $8 million on the project we're currently in design of, but we don't know exactly where that number is going to hit until we get much further in design. And certainly the scope of the 2017 project or projects would be dependent on the bond amount determined to be issued by council. So with that, we'll turn back to council with questions or comments, but I think if it helps council, staff would recommend that council tackle these two sort of components, one being the selection of streets for the next phase of the street repair and rehabilitation project, and then, secondly, tackle the concept of alternate consultant selection. And so with that, I'll return back to council.
Okay. Thank you for that thorough staff report. I'm going to see if anyone's got any questions. Karen, you have any questions?
You know, I don't at this time. Thank you.
Miriam?
No, these diagrams were very helpful, and so I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Barbara?
Yes, I do. Can you clarify what would be specialty projects for me?
I can. For example, I have a great example. The city has engaged the services of a firm called Pavement Engineering Incorporated. Pavement Engineering Incorporated is uniquely suited for pavement design in that they have a testing lab, that their engineers and laboratory personnel are very adept at determining appropriate pavement construction methods and appropriate design of that pavement, and going out in the field and taking measurements and samples, and actually in the follow-up process during construction in monitoring and assessing the performance of the contractor. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't turn to Pavement Engineering Incorporated and say, can you design this length of water line? Okay. So in some cases, depending on the firm, that would be considered a specialty. Now, there are firms that have multiple specialties. And I think one of the items I mentioned in the staff report is that if you wanted to create a on-call list of firms with multiple specialties, the list just keeps getting smaller. As mm-hmm. the projects get more complex, it's five consultants and it gets more complex. It's really maybe three that really have all those specialties and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, thank you.
Jeff?
Thank you. So I'll start with one of my questions. I noticed in our financial report this evening, our treasurer's report for the first bond measures, we still have about $600,000 plus or minus, if I read it correctly, remaining in our first bond measure. So anticipating that some of that money will be used for the closeout of that first round, will the design of the streets currently underway completely expend those funds, and then we'll start to roll over into the $8 million bond issuance? And so I guess my more general question is, we expend the first $5 million bond issuance first, and then we move to the second one, correct? So which is why we haven't seen any funds expended from the $8 million currently.
That thank you for that follow-up. That is correct, yes. We code the invoices as they come in from the contractor and the consultant. We are coding them project-specific, and certainly we're attempting to expend all of the first $5 million first, and then are moving into the $8 million bond issue.
Okay, great. So speaking to PEI and the pavement design, so how was our first series of design completed? If I recall, they were part of the consultant services that we have maintained in-house, correct? So they would not be one of the specialties that we would anticipate going out for, or how was that done?
Actually, for example, Pavement Engineering Incorporated was part of a design consulting team. Okay. So we used the typical SOQ RFP process to identify a preferred or what we thought was the most successful consultant team. It actually included a handful of consultants, soils engineering firm, Pavement Engineering Incorporated for the design of the pavement section itself, and then in this case they were engaged in actually two different contracts with us, but as the secondary consultant. And we had Stantec on one, and Canon is engaged in another for the design of the street geometry and the handicap ramp improvements and other parts. So,
okay. And so your discussion of the on-call, if I was kind of reading between the lines, your on-call, I'll apologize if my tone doesn't sound correct. So is you would anticipate that the process would be to go have a, using PEI again as the example, having a pavement design on-call service, having a waterline design on-call service, having an ADA on-call design service, having a street design on-call service rather than putting out one on-call service saying, we would like to design the streets that may include ADA, may include waterline improvements, may include other utility improvements, may include survey, may include soils reporting?
I think we have both options available to us.
Okay.
Certainly, if we want to try to move through the consultant process by one specialty at a time, we may want to have an on-call list, and certainly some of our neighboring cities do have that for individual specialties. We may also want to attempt to anticipate all the specialties involved in, say, a street project moving forward, which is, as we know so far, have been drainage design, waterline design, some sewer appurtenances in the design of that, certainly the Americans with Disability Act specialty, certainly pavement section design, geometric design, traffic engineering, possibly traffic signal design. So we have a pretty good idea of what all the specialties are, and we could certainly identify them all and seek on-call consultants who had all those specialties, or perhaps a group of firms who wanted to provide a single point source for a group of consulting firms. But as I mentioned earlier, that list will likely start getting smaller and smaller as you increase the number of complexity and the number of specialties. So
I seem to have led us down the engineering path of questions first. Hopefully that was an acceptable
you
way
stay
to go.
With us down there.
I'm as much as a lawyer can be, I'm here.
Don't worry, I'm thinking of butterflies.
It's all good. So realizing that I've sent us down the more interesting of the two paths first.
No, you're doing fine. I'm watching the clock.
Exactly.
We're good. So
I'll end my questions there. I'll have comments later, but I'll end my questions there.
Okay. So let me just ask you two, maybe three questions. So I don't know why in my mind I had always thought we were going to do Long Branch from the entire length from 4th to Oak Park, but it does not appear to be the case because then I'm looking at what's being designed now. It only goes from 3rd to 10th. Am I correct?
That is correct.
Have we missed the opportunity to have this segment from 13th to Oak Park part of that design process? I'm really wish I had not have missed that before, so I'm just kind of curious.
You have not missed the opportunity. It could have an impact on the schedule slightly as to how Long Branch is included with the remainder of streets on that list that I showed earlier. Uh-huh. I think there's certainly an opportunity there if council so desires. And as I'm sure aware, there are existing medians in that section with some limited landscaping and mostly some trees, some mature trees.
Yeah, because I guess we had the community come in and had given comments, and I think in that scope we were talking the entire length, and so I feel that we may have I may have just missed the mark a little bit. So I think maybe we should come back and have that conversation, or if it is part of this list of streets, then you know we got to talk about the timing on that. So okay,
and since this was carved out as a separate street process beyond the other streets listed in the 2016 group, there may be an opportunity now to engage our consultant to look at the other segment of Long Branch and build that in now, if that's the direction of the council.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to ask that question. When the time comes, we can have that conversation. Then I see on I have too many maps up here, but I'm looking at the city map that was very well done. This was not part of our packet. This was from a previous packet. It's fiscal year 16-17 project planner. This is the one where we showed active projects, which listed projects completed, those with light maintenance. We had projects in the design phase. We had water upgrades.
We had Oak Park in pink, pretty in pink.
For October.
So, I mean, this is a very busy map. I mean, it's a very good map. But then I look and I see sewer mains and I see the brown dots, dotted line, dash, it's a dotted line. So, somewhat related, but I did want to ask. So, when we're talking about sewer mains, and I see this map shows them in portions of, I think, I want to say North 9th, or actually, yeah, North 9th, a portion of Grand, a portion of South 8th, and 4th Street. So I'm just kind of curious because I'm trying to reconcile in my mind as we go forward and identify next set of streets, what are going to be some of the obstacles or things that hold us up. So can you speak to what is planned as far as those sewer mains and those ones that I just called out?
I can. So first, a word of caution. That map, while we did distribute it to council, is sort of an internal working document. It is one of the ways that I am able to see everything at once and hopefully avoid the stumbling block of approving a project or moving forward with an encroachment permit, even as an example, or maybe a development review project, and not understanding the complexity and number of projects that are likely to have an impact on that area. And as such, that is only as good as the information I had at the time I prepared that. There's actually new information as it relates potentially to the Grover Beach Lodge project and some additional sewer improvements.
Okay.
But what I can identify for council is that that map was developed from a number of sources. It was developed from an analysis that looked at Holiday Inn downstream sewer impact. It was developed using the original needs to be updated sewer master plan. It was developed using the original water master plan that is, as you know, in need of an update. It was developed looking at downstream impacts from the Holiday Inn for water systems. It was developed with input from the storm drain master plan, as well as additional information from field staff relative to sewer line deficiencies, water line deficiencies, storm drain deficiencies, and areas where we have ponding or other storm drain issues. And then, as you can see, a number of other things. Broadband is added into that, which is fairly well known.
Yeah.
So I can certainly speak to that map. I think
I'm really looking for more of, if it's plan work, what is the time frame? Because I'm trying to figure out as we go forward and land on the next series of streets. There's some streets that are going to be a little more challenging because, as you know, there are some where we've had to upgrade 2- and 4-inch water lines. And so then the other issue becomes, if we're going to be moving forward installing the broadband, do we start looking at streets that that match up with that nicely? So that's kind of the way my twisted mind works.
And I appreciate, if I may, Mayor Scholes, I appreciate that challenge. And I too, had the same challenge in trying to figure out how do we get council input this evening without engaging council in the level of complexity that I've been engaged in,
okay,
which is maybe 35 pages of street condition data that I received in the last month or so, coupled with a multitude of different maps and specific and master plans and all kinds of input from field crew and budget considerations. I think what I landed on is that it may be better to sort of ignore that stuff for now. I don't mean ignore it entirely, but I think council has an opportunity to look at the streets that remain to be done and to provide direction to staff on some sort of an orderly development or a targeted development. And then certainly staff can come back and say, we understand your direction and your priorities now, and we have a set amount of money, and we will use that set amount of money to the maximum extent possible, but please be aware of some following constraints that we've identified now that we know where you want to go. I think that process is probably better and allows council sort of the freedom to say, here's what we want, and then we can come back and okay. say, okay, we understand that, and here's the best way we think we can achieve that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So my last question that I'm going to ask you, and I think the Mayor Pro Tem brought this up, is that I did the same math you did, Jeff, and was thinking there was $600,000 left over from the 2015 streets, and it looks like we hadn't really used money from the 2016 issue. So roughly 8.6 mil, and then if we had other funds between that and nine. So just want to confirm those numbers, and maybe that's something that at a subsequent meeting staff can come back and just confirm those numbers, as well as where are we at with the $300,000 or so that the council had set aside for sidewalk. Because I think those monies are being utilized in development of the streets, and I know that when we established that fund, we wanted to target some high priority areas with sidewalks as well. So just curious. Okay.
Mayor Schultz, if it helps at all, we're looking at the same numbers right now. We believe that we'll carry over a couple hundred thousand possibly from the first project into the second project. Okay. And looking at the list of streets that's on the staff report and in front of us right now, it's a bit of a guess. It's a little too early to know. But we think, you know, something in the neighborhood of maybe $2 million could be left after that. But you did bring up a good point, and that is what will happen with sort of the other funds, how much water line funds need to be involved, how much sidewalk funds need to be involved. And it's a little too soon to tell right now. We need to get a little further into the design development on this project we're in right now.
Okay.
In fact, we're out walking the streets today making decisions and trying to determine how best to proceed on a couple of those, which we'll need to get in front of council with.
Fair enough. Thank you, Greg. Let me open this up, see if there's anyone in the audience who would like to address this item, seeing no one come forward and bring it back. I know the Mayor Pro Tem took us down the engineering roadway, so maybe I want to try and let's go to the selection, the process, and let me elevate us back out to 10,000, 20,000 foot level. I would just say from my perspective, and I want everyone else to weigh in on this, is we certainly appreciate all the work that's been done. I'd say the community has said that it's visible that work is happening. However, I think we all, at least I know that as we have accepted some streets as being built per the plans and specs, we know that the last series of streets seems to have been completed, and so now we are still in a process of getting the next series designed. So there's going to be a 4 to 6 month gap from construction activity to getting someone on board and starting with the next. So I think from my standpoint is let's pick a process that closes that gap. I would think, and this is where I want everyone to weigh in, is I had kind of thought, and I think there are members in the community who I've talked to, it said, hey, we thought you were going to continually be doing streets, and you weren't going to do streets and then stop and then have to start all over again. So how do we close that gap to where, as some streets are being constructed, others are being designed, so that we could close that gap? And so I think that's where I want to leave it, is maybe to find out where the council majority's thoughts were. Was the thought that we would do a series of streets and then go back and design and then go do more streets in that six-month gap, or where was the expectation that we would just consistently be doing streets until they are done? So I wanted to kind of get everyone's take on that. Miriam?
Yeah, I think in my mind, I just thought the money would lead us. But right now, yeah, we do have the money ready to go. So, and I think as far as anything I would want to say in the consultant list or the methods for choosing consultant, not being an engineer, not being close to an engineer, I would just like to defer to whichever process you feel would be most effective, but would also close that gap. You know, I want to be fast, but I want to be effective. So, but I agree. I would love, since we have money, to keep going with the money we have.
Yeah. Karen?
Well, I agree. I agree with that.
I do think, though, that probably a combination of the consultant selection alternatives would certainly be, I think, in best interest of staff and the community as well. I know that's something that we are doing at San Luis Coastal, and so we, based on the size of the project, that's how we determine where we're going to go, how we're going to put it out. And then back to the streets, though, do you want us to talk about how we want the streets to, or we want to go with that some at another time?
So let's do that another time. I wanted to kind of, because I'm hoping that if the council majority is in agreement that, hey, you know, we want you to obviously take a process that gets the work done efficiently and effectively to where we're not having these gaps. Because I think right now what at least I'm sensing is that work has been done and people are appreciative of it, but there is a long gap before anyone's going to roll another piece of equipment out there to do street repair. And I think that's, you know, want to make sure that the community's not finally starting to come back and go, hey, that was great what you did already, but it's been 4 months since we've seen any active construction. And I think if there's a process that we can do to improve that is, I think, where, in my mind, and I think that's what I've heard from the first two council members who've said that. And so I'm going to go to Barbara because you can go last.
Whatever strikes the best balance of processes and moving forward is what I'm looking for.
Great. So I think we have that. Jeff?
Yeah. And I'll kind of iterate or reiterate what some of my fellow council members have said. So I think the getting us there effectively and efficiently following the money is the most prudent way. And putting my former business owner hat on. So, Greg and I can have a respectful dialogue about this in the fact that most of the engineering firms that either I've worked with either locally or throughout the state have the needed or the necessary expertise in-house to do the work that we're asking them to do. It's road design. There is a level of complexity to it, but it's not so complex that you need several different. You don't need obviously a mechanical consultant. You don't need an electrical consultant predominantly. So the infrastructure improvements can be done in fashion in such a way that yes, if we have an on-call group of folks, we'd be able to, for instance, say we want to do these next six streets. Tomorrow, staff can go forward and say, council gave us direction on these next six streets. One of our consultants, give me a cost, assuming it's in agreement or in line with what we've done on previous ones, go start. So we come back in 6 months and realize that we have an additional $2 million of available bond monies. We either staff comes back with, here's our light maintenance program. This consultant now goes designs that. So, I mean, I think the intent that I've always been striving to get us towards is we do one, we've already started the next one 6 months before it or 4 months before it or whatever, so that we don't have those gaps. The only gaps that we end up having are weather gaps, and then obviously that's a struggle as well. Hopefully we get weather to have those needed gaps. But it also, if we get into a cycle where our bidding climate is such that it doesn't benefit us, we've already done enough work behind that so that we can avoid that. One of the benefits of our $5 million bond measure right now and how we've got so much done is we had a really good bidding climate. If we can maintain that bidding climate in this upcoming year, I believe we can do another very good chunk of streets with the monies we have in hand.
So, Jeff, let me ask you, so would the second alternative laid out by staff accomplish that, which was be to develop an on-call list of consultants for specific types of projects?
I think it would, and I think where Greg and I were having a kind of a hopefully it was mostly a friendly banter, was I think he was breaking apart some of the consultant needs or the expertise, where my thought is that they can be together. And so the struggle for that I can see for let me say that differently. The opportunity for staff would be to find a large enough group of consultants, and I think the two that we have in place right now between either Stantec and Canon would be able to do that. Those would be the size of firms that we'd be doing. A two-person firm would not be the appropriate grouping of firms unless they partnered with someone else. And so I guess where I'm going is that, yes, that gets, in my mind, gets us to where the city can avoid those gaps.
Okay, so that's the
yes.
Second alternative, right? It's great. You add the details, and I'm just going to make... I think everyone... staff, I know this probably takes a little more effort on staff's part, but I think if this gets to where the majority of the council has said, hey, we want to be able to be efficient and close some of those gaps, and second alternative seems to be the one that would work. I mean, is that something that is workable with the current resources, or would we need to consider additional resources?
I was poised to comment on that, and thank you, Mayor, for that intro. I would actually agree with Mayor Pro Tem Lee in that there certainly are, and I think I can off the top of my head identify maybe four or five. I'm not going to try to hit them all dead on, but let's say five firms.
No more than five.
I think there's five that have a very wide range of specialties within that firm, or either regularly partner with some other firms that could propose as a single group. I don't see that as being an impediment. Kind of looking at council's primary goal, and that is not to have these 4 to 6 month gaps. You know, I think even in some ways, while I'm not discouraging council, I'm actually kind of encouraging council to consider the on-call selection process. I don't think that's the only thing that is contributing to that. I think you do have to recall that or remember that. A lot of that just certainly is directly related to current staff resources. We have a lot of significant projects on the plate in front of us, and we're sort of we're operating a lot like we're sitting on the record player right now. We're sort of going around and, okay, I get a moment to work on this one, and then I get to go around and work on that one and that one and that one and that one, and then we get back to the process that you're interested in again, and record players turning about once every 4 to 6 months right now. We know that we're moving rapidly forward in the process of selecting a capital projects manager. We could even supplement that process with additional outside consulting services. I think if I understand, I'm sure that the city manager is listening and hearing the same things I am this evening, and that is that we'd really like to see projects ready to go to construction on a more maybe every couple month basis. I think that can be achieved in the interim, in the short term, with a collection of staff resources and some additional outside consulting, and in the long term with a smaller reliance on outside consulting and obviously the development of our new position and existing staff.
Okay, so then I think we are talking about everyone okay with giving staff direction, we'll do the on-call list of consultants with, let's say, up to five firms, and then you guys figure out how to implement that. Because I think the other part of that is you identified it as a third alternative, but really it's really a matter of breaking projects into smaller components or individual specialties. And so I think from, you know, the last Newport seems to be a challenging street from a design standpoint, would have been a nice one to break out. So I think that's maybe something staff can just come back. We want to do on call, and then you all decide if there's a project, whether it's Newport or Long Branch, that may be better if it was broken out of a group. I think we will leave that to your expertise.
Sure. Yeah, and any process improvement will come with it, with its opportunities and challenges, and we'll jump into it and pull it together and work with the council direction to help implement this goal with the idea of shortening the time gap that the council has articulated.
Sounds good. And I want to make sure that speaking, I'm sure the council don't mind if I wouldn't mind if I spoke for them to say we appreciate all the work that's been done. We know a lot of work has been done. It's, you know, trying to just make sure. I think we've seen where the voters said, hey, we're going to trust you to issue up to $48 million in bonds and fix our streets, and we just want to make sure we're doing it in an efficient and effective way. Sound good? Yes? He's in agreement. Okay. So let's go back and talk about the next series of streets. And so I did want to set the stage a little bit on this because I know the project management or the PMI system carries or the condition carries some weight. But I know this council had said, hey, let's add a little, let's go from just a computer model to add some human elements to this. And the only thing I remember we said, let's talk about doing complete streets from one end to the other. I think there's some opportunities here as we look at the map of what we've done. I said we had talked about school access being a really important one. So I think there's some streets on here that make sense from that standpoint. We had talked about fire and emergency response. So I think there's an opportunity here. And then obviously the pavement condition. And then I would just say one other that I would maybe we should consider is access into neighborhoods. And when I say that, I'm really thinking more the area west of 4th Street. So, you know, maybe we use those sort of things as part of as a selection for this next series of streets. So, Karen, I want to let you go first and get your thoughts on this.
Well, I do like I agree with you. The critical condition of the streets is important, but also the human element is important as well. So we asked our residents to weigh in. So I would like to take a look at the second level or the second group of streets that okay. had come from the outreach. I do like the idea of an orderly infill. So particularly where we see that there are opportunities to complete a street. And I just think it makes for just much more, not only probably orderly construction, but also a path of travel.
Yeah.
It just makes it seem like the whole town is like that, although it's really not. But when you're on that street, it kind of feels like it is. So I think... From what I've heard, I think that we could certainly go forward in that respect, and probably cover all of the bases like we did in our first two rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But also get some of these streets, get them all complete.
Okay, Miriam.
I think if I'm just looking at specific streets when we talk about completing and especially talking about being near schools, I drive up and down 10th all the time, and it is right in front of Grover Beach Elementary, and it always feels so weird that it's done so nicely, and then there's a big gap in front of the school, and then there's that little bit at the end.
Yeah.
So that, to me, would be a good one, and that would also be one where I would highly encourage or like to weigh in on sidewalks, because it is so close to not only an elementary school but also a preschool, and being a person who walks to that preschool a lot, there's a blind when you come over that nice little piece that's done now, people are flying and then it's blind, so okay. It would be nice to be on a sidewalk instead of out in the road. And also I'm glad you brought up Long Branch, because I was thinking the same thing when I was looking at this, thinking, oh man, it would be really nice for that to be done, just because it is such a big street. And also just looking way down at the bottom, I remember there was a reason we couldn't complete South 16th, but that just seems kind of like an outlier, too. But then I think we have gotten such a good start that I think it is safe after that to defer a little bit to the PMI, because we do want to conserve funds, and I know that is usually supposed to be financially a responsible way to go. Two areas that we haven't touched at all that that I really we should do something would be that west of 4th area. I'm down there a lot, and it is bad.
It is.
And also our industrial area, because we've talked a lot about revamping that area and getting it up to speed, and then you look at it and it's like, oh my gosh, the entire thing is orange. So that would not attract good businesses. So those would be my two areas if we're looking at areas, but those couple that I mentioned would be my few streets.
Okay. Barbara?
Yeah, I'm looking at First Street or Front Street in the western upper triangle or quadrangle. And I agree on the Long Branch. We've got Mentone is in the works already. The next one up would be Seabright from 12th to the eastern boundary. I don't see, well, all the south of Farrell, the oranges, I would kind of like to see that upgraded as well.
Okay. Jeff?
Okay. And I'm going to kind of reiterate a couple things as well. I am definitely in agreement with finishing 10th Street. So I think that does a couple things in addition to completing that street and going by a school. I think it provides a good connector for Seabright that Councilmember Nichols just mentioned to start to fashion three sides of the school if we continue Long Branch. Mm-hmm. So we've got that identified, and then perhaps continuing Atlantic City from where we stopped at 8th Street, I think it was 8th Street, all the way to Front Street.
Yeah.
And then this becomes a Parkview discussion, but it also becomes a larger discussion with regards to wherever we did a waterline improvement project, so now has a trench there. So if we could perhaps identify those as some of the next streets to become to become completed, and so the trench disappears, right. Trench lines, which would be a Parkview type of approach. Completing 8th Street, I think, would be a north-south connector, because we looks like we stopped that at Grand Avenue, but if we connect that up to its to Atlantic City, and then yes, I'm in agreement with the industrial area, the poor the streets condition wise, where I think that might be an opportunity for us to do some of that, maybe not the complete light maintenance, but some of it that's secondary, which then becomes the that working on first group, design the second group, as soon as the first group is finished, going into the secondary maintenance so those are my thoughts there.
No, I'm sorry. I was listening to everyone, and I'm amazed at the amount of agreement on several of these streets. So I'm impressed. So let me just, I want to go down maybe a list of streets. And it's going to sound like a large number, but I think what we'll ask staff to do is, when you come back, let's decide if it's, you know, 2017 phase one, 2017 phase two, and then maybe there's a three, because I think one of the unknowns is Measure J. And if that measure is successful, we would have some additional resources. So I'm going to try and do the number streets first. I think Barbara had talked about First Street, and I agree. I think First Street, and you can even take First Street and look, and it basically, I'm trying to look at this running from Atlantic City to Front to Ocean View. It almost kind of makes a loop. And I would say if you're over there, then Carmaldi would be a street to take a look at.
Yep.
So that's First. Then I think the extension of North 8th makes a lot of sense. I think 10th Street, and that would be, so 8th would be Grant to Atlantic City, because I think that's a straight shot from City Hall up to Atlantic City to the school. 10th Street makes sense, and for the reasons Miriam and Jeff both stated. Um,
Okay, then I would say Atlantic City would appear to be, I think, a really good one to extend to complete. That is a school route. I would say Long Branch, definitely, and if there's a way for us to do the rest of Long Branch as an add-on, maybe we can kind of cheat a little bit. So I think the discussion, I think, Jeff, anything you and maybe Barbara brought up, Seabright, I think that makes sense. Mm-hmm. The one street I do want to throw in here is I was walking on this street the other day and talked to several owners on this street, and it's Ocean View. Ocean View seems to be one of the main entries into this western, this area west of 4th Street. Mm-hmm. And once you do that, then it allows you to pick up the 1st Street in some of those. So I would say let's put that, add that. The only other two I had that I hadn't heard was, I was thinking Rockaway, since I know Greg was saying let's not look at like this one map, but I think if there is a element to it with the fiber, we should do that,
right?
Mm-hmm. At least put that on the list. And if we're going to do Rockaway from 4th to 11th, I know now I'm micromanaging. If you do that, we should do 11th Street from Grand to the school, because I think that's another access to the school, and it goes right by Miners. I mean, and Mike Miner, mm-hmm, several years ago had approached many of us about that street.
And that falls into the gas line, water line, trenches as well.
And then I think everyone is exactly, I think the street south of Farrell in the industrial area, I think you hadn't thought of those, but I think that's a good call, and maybe that's that third subset. And the reason I'm saying that is, while it's great from a commercial standpoint, the others have primary residential homes on them, and I know part of this measure talked about fixing our residential streets. So I would say if Measure J passes, or if there are other sources that we can utilize, then we attack those. So I would say maybe in a subsequent meeting we have that conversation as to what's the priority, what are the challenges, and then we can kind of refine the list. But I think that's a good list of streets that really addresses the four or five criteria I mentioned before that started discussion. So we have consensus. You good on that?
Yeah.
Okay. I have to say I'm very impressed with this group. I thought for sure we'd be here till 10. I'm sure the city manager thought that.
There was commonality with the human element of the street, we appreciate
absolutely
that. And staff has some work to do in taking these streets and working through these details, looking at the technical information. But I think this was very helpful in getting the broad overview of where the council is coming from, and then we can fashion a list of streets and break it up in the right projects.
Yeah, and thank you, staff, for bringing this forward in a timely manner, and all of the hard work you've put into this. I think we are definitely on the right track.
And Greg and I can have a further conversation if you want to go longer.
You guys do that offline.
We still have the item you pulled, so you got us.
So we got item number 9, and I'm going to recuse myself since I am the city's representative on the South County Sanitation District, and this deals with the billing, and I believe that.
And I will recuse myself as well, since I'm the alternate on that.
Okay.
I
know, right? I'm trying to go figure out where some more. Oh, wait, I can take these and eat these off camera. All right.
Okay, guys, something to do.
We'll see you back here in a couple minutes, hopefully, for council committee reports and so forth.
Yeah.
So as they both leave the chambers, city manager, did you want to introduce the item?
Yes, Mayor Pro Tem. What's before the council is a billing agreement between the city and the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. This agreement would essentially formalize a practice that's been in place for some time, where we send out the billing on behalf of the sanitary district, since we have the billing capability within our own operation. So this agreement kind of documents that and puts some expectations and standards. It establishes an annual fee for service that we charge to the San District. And this would continue on an ongoing basis until such point that the district may look at other options. But until that time, we would keep this service going on their behalf.
Great. Thank you for that. Any questions to my left?
None from me.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
I just had one question, and under the fiscal impact, it says that the city will receive approximately $22,000 in revenue. I neglected to go look at the budget, but I'm anticipating that that is the budgeted amount that we were anticipating coming to the city under this.
I'll let Ms. Chapman answer the question.
Good evening. It's either 20 or 20 or 22. Last year, we billed for $20,000. The setup prior was just a little bit different than how this is going to end up working out, but it would be an additional $2,000 in revenue to the city.
Okay, so we're either right on budget or we're actually above with revenues with what we anticipated.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. So that was the only question I had, so I'll open this up to the public. Seeing no one rush forward, I will go ahead and close this to the public and see what the pleasure is.
I'm ready to make a motion.
The floor is yours.
Okay. That we approve the agreement for billing services and authorize the mayor to execute the agreement on behalf of the city.
I'll second.
Great. Just a point of question. Would that be me signing that as the mayor pro tem, as the acting mayor at this point?
Does yes.
That, okay. So then was this a voice vote or a?
It's a voice, I believe.
Okay. Then.
No, I think it's a roll call.
Or is it a roll call?
Yeah. I think that's what I saw.
Then roll call, please.
It is. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Great. So then hopefully they had time to eat popcorn off camera, but it is time for them to return.
Come on, Jack. Hurry up now. So.
So.
That was quick. Yeah.
Thank you for your quick adoption of that.
Certainly.
And
I'm not going to eat without us.
Okay. Let's move into council committee reports. Karen, you have anything?
I had no council committee meetings.
Okay. Miriam.
I had a housing trust fund meeting where we recommended the Housing Trust Fund give an increased amount of tax credit loans, and that is going to be brought then to the board to discuss further. And we also talked about a potential loan to the Prado Road Homeless Shelter, but we're going to get more information before making the loan, but it will probably happen in the future, but we just need more information. And we did, I think all of us got from Visit San Luis Obispo the most recent annual report. So they're doing a lot of great things, and I'm going to read through it more closely. I'll bring anything back that needs brought up specifically for us, but just wanted to let people know it's out there and they've been successful. The Tourism Marketing District's been successful. And as far as Chamber of Commerce, there's going to be a lunch Wednesday where our city manager is going to talk about Measure L. So I plan to go and should be good.
Very good. Thank you. Barbara?
I have a South County Transit meeting on Wednesday. Capsule on Thursday. And I don't know whether this will come on. Well, actually, I will put it now instead of council communications. We have a critical need for a low-income population representative at CAPSLO for the board of directors. The gal that was acting as the low-income rep has family issues that she can't continue. And so anybody that is involved with the low-income population, any of the public services or anything like that, that would like to sit on the CAPSLO board, we would really like to interview you.
Jeff?
Okay. So I haven't had any meetings, but I do have an item as the representative of the Integrated Waste Management Authority on tomorrow's Board of Supervisors agenda. There is an appeal. I think I've mentioned in the past the anaerobic digester project, which will end up increasing the recycled ability to recycle food waste in the county. There was an appeal of a planning commission approval, and I'll be speaking with your concurrence tomorrow as the board representative from the IWMA in support of the project.
Okay, very good. For me, let me start with the slow cog. I think you all saw in the Friday letter, the board unanimously approved $320,000 from Prop 1B funds for the purchase of that property to the south of the existing depot, which means we can now move forward with this project. And Matt, you can add anything on this one that you would like. But I just wanted to make sure that the board was aware and the committee was aware that we've now secured the funding that we need to move this project forward.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, we're very pleased by this information, and it's been a great collaboration between the city, SLOCOG, and the county. Thank Mayor Scholes for his leadership on the SLOCOG board and speaking on behalf of the project. Our next step is to finalize the property acquisition agreements and to bring that back to the council on November 21st, and then ultimately to the Board of Supervisors for their approval.
Well, excellent. Nice work, everyone. I did also want to report to you all that I have South San Luis Obispo Sanitation District meeting on Wednesday. That'll be another fun meeting. But I do have a bit of good news to share with you all. You all are aware that we had reached agreement with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. They had to take that agreement and make it available to the public for public input, and there was one, at least there was only one that I was, one person that I was aware of that made comment on the agreement. But the good news is, I guess it was one person and then I guess an entity or a group. Long story short is basically the settlement has been accepted. There was a minor tweak to the modeling component. There was some money that was set aside to use to fill the gap for the cost to do some modeling, I guess the model for the groundwater basin. And so I know that Mr. Ray and some of the others were able to submit some changes to that gives us some flexibility to make sure that if we have one player that doesn't participate, that it doesn't derail the entire study. So I think we're able to move forward. But that public comment period is closed. The settlement is finaled. So hopefully we've turned the corner and we can move on to more positive things at the district. Now, that said, Wednesday will be, as I said, it's going to be a very challenging meeting. There are some HR issues on the agenda, and in particular, I'm not disclosing anything that's not out in the communities. There are two grievances that we will have to hear and make a decision on. It's just a matter of having bylaws and laws that basically allow someone to say, hey, if we are not happy with the decision made by the district administrator, we can appeal it to the board. I've never seen this in the 12 years I've been on this council and any other places I've worked. But it is what it is. It is on the agenda. I imagine it's going to generate quite a bit of discussion in the community. So just so you are not surprised with respect to what's on the agenda and the news stories, I'm sure, or the discussion that comes out of it. So I'm trying not to give too many details, but I think just know that there are two items, and I think subsequent to this, it would be prudent for the board, whoever it is, whether it's this current board in this format or a subsequent board, really needs to figure out how to protect the interests of and the privacy of employees. But it is what it is. I'll let Matt and fill you in regarding the Pismo Beach Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project. I had a conflict, so I was not able to make the last one. So
just make when we come to you, we'll help you. If you want to just give us a quick update on that. How about council communications? Barbara, you have anything?
No.
Karen?
No.
Jeff?
So I did have one question. There was a question with regards to the Digital West construction contract. So it didn't appear on our agenda for this evening. So I just wonder if you can give us a quick update as to where that stands and how quickly you anticipate it coming back. Whether we need to potentially consider a special meeting or based upon workload or scheduling.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. We are working with Digital West to prepare the item for award of contract to the council. We had some difficulties in kind of getting all the players together to be able to kind of work through the list of respondents that submitted back for the construction contract RFP for the bidding process. We wanted to make sure that we had that information in place. We wanted to make sure we also clarified the operating costs and the operating agreements for this very important project so that when we went to council, we had everything ready to go for the award of contract and the allocation of the funding from the city, from the county, from Digital West, and that we were ready to go as soon as council made that award. That discussion took place last week, from what I understand, and so staff is working towards bringing this item to the council on November 21st, which is the next council date.
Okay.
Okay. So no need to consider a special hearing date for whether I know the 21st is probably, since we're not having the 7th, I don't know if the 21st is getting significantly challenged or impacted for schedule. So I don't know if we need to consider that because I forget what we're doing in December. Do we just have one meeting in December or are we doing two meetings? I think it's just the one.
We have one meeting on the 12th. And at this point, that's a mostly ceremonial meeting, but of course, we can schedule items for that meeting that need to be heard that night.
Well, perhaps we should talk about a special meeting in November because I think December it will be a new council, or at least there will be a new member or two.
Yeah. If the council wished a special meeting, we could certainly work towards that. I think from the staff end, November 21st would still allow us to bring the contract to council for approval and then to move forward with the construction in a timely manner. We also are kind of factoring in any kind of winter rain-related construction impacts that may happen going forward. And Greg, do you have anything to add regarding kind of the timing? Because you, I know, had the discussion with Digital West last week and maybe able to shed some more information about where they are.
I can. Thank you, City Manager Bronson. We did meet with representatives from Digital West last week and clarified a number of the contract terms. As you may recall, it's a somewhat complex contract in terms of who is responsible for what component, both from the design phase and now moving forward into construction. I believe we've clarified that information. We're looking for one small piece of information back relative to the separation of costs between the county and the city, and I think we're ready to move forward. It's not going to be really a complicated item in terms of the council presentation. It could possibly be on consent. I think that's something to think about. So I think by the time we get there, it's just going to be award of a contract.
Okay. And so you guys are telling us by pushing this off another month, we are not going to delay the start of any construction or installation?
Well, certainly the sooner we can award the project, certainly the sooner the contractor can start. I think between the 7th, the meeting that's canceled, and certainly the 21st, although that's obviously half a month delay, There may be other factors that come into consideration, as City Manager Bronson has mentioned. It is likely that there will be weather delays associated with this project, so I'm not sure that's going to be the critical path.
Okay. Okay. Miriam.
I had two communications. One, I wanted to bring up an idea I had about the Grover Beach Library. Barbara and I are both on the board, but I have not discussed this idea with Barbara.
Do they need to recuse themselves?
We have a real issue with getting our programs and our publicity out because we are not a county library. We are a volunteer-run library, although we're very strong and have a very strong following. And for years, the county would recognize us and include us on their website, which was really helpful because as sometimes libraries are becoming less popular, the people who do use them go to the county website. They look for story times. They look for library locations, and we're being left out. So and we used to be on the county website. And then a new person took over and said, forget it, you can't be on there. And it's really been hard for us. We have to spend so much time publicizing that we even exist. And we kind of just took no for an answer for a while. But a discussion I had with the city manager brought it to me in a new light that we are doing the county library somewhat of a service because if we did not exist, there would be much more pressure for a county library to exist because there's one in Oceano and there's one in AG. And is the one in Shell private or public?
No, it's county.
County. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing for Grover. And if we weren't there, there may and should be more pressure for there to be a county library. And I'm just wondering if it's something as a city we might want to write a letter or have the city manager ask for a meeting to kind of discuss, can't we somehow just be included on your website as part of your story times? I mean, we have three programs. It would just be as easy as including our three programs along with the other programs. And I'm not sure if it's something we want to do as a city, but that just to me seemed like a new angle.
So I guess my first thought is, has your board, how many members are on your library board?
About 10.
Has everyone weighed in on this?
I wanted to run it by you. Well, we weighed in on a board as far as, yes, we want to be on the county website, and then we went through all the channels that we could go through and were told no.
I guess I'm just thinking if it was a formal request coming from the board, I think I would be a little more...
And I can take it back to the board. I wanted to run it by you guys first.
So, yeah, I would. Well, let me just weigh in, then you guys weigh in. I think if your board makes a formal request for this council to weigh in and write a letter to the county librarian or whoever has made the determination that the Grover Beach Library is not part of the Black Gold system, unless they've changed it in a while, because my children are grown, so I use the library as much. But I think that gives us better solid ground, and then we're not the board won't feel like the city is coming and being big brother or big sister or whomever and overstepping its bounds. Right. I think we want to be respectful of the folks who run that library, because I know in the past when I suggested things that I personally thought would improve it, I wanted to be respectful that they choose to run the library in a certain manner. But Karen?
I think that is the path we should take, no doubt.
Okay. I agree.
Okay. I'll bring it up at our next board meeting and bring it back. The other thing I have is the Chemistry of Cocktails event coming back to the Exploration Station. It is the Sunday before the election. If you don't already need a drink, you'll need one that day. I mean, come on.
Trust me.
It is Sunday, November 6th from 1 to 4. Tickets are $60 each. It includes food, which I picked out, so I know there's a lot of food, samples of all the drinks. We have 10 to 15 bartenders, live music, And this, we have not had the event for 2 years. So this is us bringing it back. So it's very important we're a success to keep our, get our momentum and keep our momentum. So I have tickets personally, and I will deliver tickets to anyone who calls the city and asks for them. Or also you can get them at explorationstation.org, but buy them from me.
So put me down. Put me down for 4 tickets.
Yes. Thank you. And I
know
Councilmember Bright is buying a ticket. Yes. Yes. It's on TV.
That's awesome. It is. That's a challenge out there.
Challenge.
To department heads.
It's going to be
acting
great.
Acting department heads.
And the city does have Uber.
Yes.
There is an Uber. Right? And there is a taxi service. So in the city. So
there you go. So
drive home.
So the one communication I had, and then I want to turn it over to the city manager, was the TROG, the gentleman, was this past weekend. And while I didn't make it down because I was out campaigning, I was down there at Grover Grind. There you go, a little notoriety. And Spoon Trade, and talking to those business owners, they were basically, I think the owner of Spoon Trade said it was probably one of their best weekends since they have been in business. And so it was a very successful event. I know weather was not their best friend, but it was pretty amazing to see the vintage vehicles, the folks who were who came to this community, and hopefully they'll choose to do it in the future, and we, as an organization, will be fully engaged and be part of it, because it was quite impressive. Yeah. Jeff, you want to add something?
Actually, if you don't mind, I do, because I did get a chance to go down Saturday afternoon and see a number of the old cars and the number of the vintage motorcycles that were actually racing on the beach. They did struggle with high tides and storm swells, but I think in some respects that actually made some of the viewing that much more interesting to see how they move themselves around that. But very impressive a group of folks. I did talk with a state park ranger and said that they did have a good number of attendees, even as a result of the weather. They probably did have a little bit less, but they are hopeful that they will come back next year. But if there's anything that the community can do or we can do as a city, as they do come back to participate and do that, I think that would be a good advantage to the business community as well as the residents who come to visit.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that drove home was we got to find a way to have more events either in the heart of town or even at that end of Grand. I know we had talked about at some point doing like a butterfly walk or some event around the butterflies or something, so we really need to figure out what that looks like. But anyway, mm-hmm. Very good event. Okay. Matt.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I do have a number of items to share with you this evening. First, we greatly value our partnership with Cal Poly on all different fronts. And we had a recent example and have one coming up this Saturday. On October 9th, we had the 17th annual basketball clinic taking place at Mentone Park. We had 50 kids from around the area, including two of mine, take part in this annual clinic with the Cal Poly women's basketball team. It was a fantastic event that had skills, training, and a lot of fun camaraderie, and we thank Cal Poly for their ongoing support for this event. And then this Saturday is Make a Difference Day. We are partnering with Cal Poly and the United Way to offer some volunteer projects for Cal Poly students. We decided to offer two different park projects, one at Ramona Park and then also at Golden West Park, for some cleaning and just light maintenance. Nothing too heavy, but just some kind of cleaning projects in particular to give a good volunteer opportunity for college kids to come down and help improve our park facilities. So we'll be working with the kids this Saturday around probably 10:30 until 2:00 or so at both of those park sites, and just again helping to get some good community service out of the Cal Poly students. Secondly, I wanted to just advise the council on some Halloween festivities that the city is sponsoring. So Friday the 28th, we have our carved pumpkin contest, and then the trunk and treat event that the Chamber Rotary is helping us put on. That's on Friday the 28th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Ramona Garden Park Center.
And then on Monday the 31st, Halloween itself, we're actually having some festivities here at City Hall. We're having a costume contest for our employees and departments. You may have seen some of the counters that are currently under display for the festivities. And then from 3 to 5, we're also going to be hosting kids to come by and do some trick-or-treating here at City Hall. We delivered some flyers at local schools this past week, and so for any kids that want to do some pre-neighborhood trick-or-treating at City Hall, we're going to be open for business and helping to encourage people to come by City Hall and check us out on Halloween afternoon. The mayor mentioned the regional groundwater sustainability project that we've been engaged in for the last several months. This is a regional collaborative involving the cities of Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and Arroyo Grande, along with the Oceano CSD and the South Sanitary District. This is a project that involves taking recycled water that will be produced from the sanitary flows and ultimately treating it and injecting it back into the groundwater basin as part of our long-term water supply. There's a lot of work that's gone on with this project and a lot more work still to come. Mayor Scholes is serving on our Stakeholders Advisory Committee. On the technical end, both Greg and myself are taking part in this process as well. There are going to be a number of key informational pieces and ultimately actions that each city will be asked to consider as part of a long-term involvement in this process. And, of course, the sanitary district has a very important role for the reasons the mayor articulated earlier with using the settlement dollars towards helping to advance this project and really putting this into a regional context. This is more than just one city. This is a regional project that will ultimately have regional governance associated with it. We'll have more information as part of our water supply update that will be given to the council here at an upcoming council meeting, but I wanted to just provide some basic information regarding the project and the work that staff and the mayor is doing on your behalf to help advance our interest in this project. And then just two other points that I wanted to raise with the council. At the request of Councilmember Shaw, I wanted to raise an issue regarding the Visit Slow travel guide. Councilmember Shaw mentioned their annual report. Along those lines, there is an idea that I wanted to float to the council and see what the council's thoughts were regarding whether the city should put an ad into the upcoming edition of the travel guide for 2017-2018. Some cities across the county do put in ads, such as Pismo Beach, Paso Robles, Atascadero. We historically have not, but there could be an opportunity for us to consider that for this next travel guide. The cost for a half-page ad, just for reference, is about $2,000. One thought that staff may have, if the council was interested, was to work with an area business that may be willing to work with us on a sponsorship basis to help offset the cost of this particular ad. But since this is something the city has not done before, I wanted to raise it to the council and just see if there were any questions or thoughts regarding the value of Grover Beach putting in an ad into this travel guide that would go out to folks across the area and throughout the state and country. And then I have one more item as well, but maybe I can pause here and see if the council has any questions or comments regarding the ad.
Well, I guess we can't really give direction, and maybe if there's interest to place something on the agenda to have a full discussion. I think that's not just the ad. Maybe it's a discussion of marketing and branding, something that we've always talked about and haven't really taken the next step. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what's the deadline, though. Would we run the risk of missing the deadline?
I believe that there is a deadline coming up for the travel guide within the next couple of weeks. They are flexible with us.
Is it an annual travel guide or is it a monthly?
It's an annual travel guide. Oh. It would go out for the 2017-2018 time frame. Hmm.
Okay. I know. Do you have discretionary marketing funds or is this something we have to do?
I would probably consider this part of the economic development program, and thus we do have some funding that we could allocate for this, again, if this was something that was valuable for us.
Well, I would say while you have a budget, I think that's how we're spending them, and I think you want to check with this council. So,
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Any thoughts? Yeah. So what do some of the ads look like from the other cities?
Yeah, I mean, I read through it last year. It was Chief Copsey, City Manager Copsey, and I at the meeting. And if you don't pay to play at all, you're really left out in the cold. So we had like two lines about the train station that I had written for them. And maybe they mentioned the locked in, but we were very, and then it was like any mention of the beach was either Pismo or Oceano. And it's like, you're showing a picture of our beach yet calling it something else. So I don't know if buying a half page or quarter page ad would at least get us more in the mix, but I highlighted where we were included, and for zero, you get close to zero.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And as one option, I could provide the council with the examples of what's been done from other communities and kind of what ads they have in place.
I think that would be a good start.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's something you can provide Friday or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And then just one more item, to bring to the council. To bring to the council's attention, at the League conference, there was a session put on regarding what's called active shooter training, something that certainly no community wishes they ever wish to experience, but yet the training is something that at the appropriate time and places is valuable in preparation. So the idea kind of came forth in conversation with Councilmember Shaw. I wanted to raise it with the full council and put it in the context of emergency training and preparation in general, and perhaps this is something we can build into our future emergency training needs as a council and as an organization.
Any thoughts?
I think that's a valuable tool to have in our tool shed. I think it's as a part of a larger discussion. We've never had a council participation in an event like that, and I think that's something that we've discussed in the past under former city managers and former police chiefs. And this would be an opportunity to bring that whole discussion forward. I mean, I think that's active shooter is one component of emergency training.
Mm-hmm. One thing they talked about at the conference that they were doing in one of the communities near San Bernardino was active shooter trainings that were open to the public, because the more people in a community that just know the basic first aid to do when they see a gunshot wound, the better. The more people who know in that situation you have to run, hide, or fight. Because usually you're told don't do anything till the police come. But so it's just educating the community also. So I don't know what we want to do with that, but that's what they said.
So how about this? And I'm sure Commander Miller and acting police chief and probably even Chief Lieberman, there are actually programs where, and I can just say in my other role, I'm required every year to do active shooter training. And it's a software program. So do we have that? Is that something we can make available to community members? I think that would be a good start. And I think the Mayor Pro Tem is exactly right. This is it's a very sensitive subject to me, because this council has on more than one occasion said we need to be part of emergency response and training, and have never been invited. At least I've never been invited. And when I was a staffer with the City of SLO, we did it and the council members were there, because if we have an emergency in this community, no offense to anyone sitting in this room and anyone who's worn those uniforms before, people are going to look for this council and the mayor in particular to provide information. So we really need to get training and get ourselves up to speed of how we respond and we communicate to the community. So I think we need to talk about that. And then the active shooter, I think if we have some programs that we can offer to the community, I think that makes sense. So I think we just want to make sure we do this in a comprehensive manner. That doesn't mean do nothing. That just means let's talk about it and let's fill in the gaps where we've got gaps now, because we want to make sure that we are trained in those areas to help out the community in an emergency situation.
And
I totally agree.
I completely agree with that. I've heard now Supervisor Meacham and at the time Mayor of Paso Robles, Meacham, talk about the earthquake and how his participation and apparently the city of Paso had just had a emergency training prior to that. And some of that training is, I mean, going back to having the council participate is, Council, thank you very much. Get out of the way. So when the discussion with the media or discussion with the other community partners, it's appropriate to for the council. But the council is not the ones tasked with going to find folks. That's our men and women in uniform. And so it's knowing when the roles are appropriate as well. So mm-hmm. So I think that a very good discussion, but I think globalizing it, not globalizing it, but making it a larger, fully comprehensive discussion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we definitely are interested in all aspects of it. Okay. And maybe at the, when do we have the next meeting? Oh, the 20th. Well, that
that agenda is getting a bit full, but we will bring back an item to the council regarding emergency training involving the council members' roles and other roles, and then kind of weave in the active shooter as part of an overall framework of, mm-hmm. of training.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Okay. Well, you had a long list tonight.
We're a very busy city. There's a lot going on.
Okay, very good. City Attorney, you have anything tonight?
Just to bring you up to speed, we're working diligently on your marijuana ordinances. We have the regulatory ordinance draft done, or the initial draft, and then we're going to get your land use ordinances probably this week. So we're working hard to get that done as quickly as possible. Other than that, not too much.
Very good. And I'll just add to that, in case the council members saw, I had gotten a call from a reporter from KUIT, and he had called me on the heels of the City of Paso Robles' decision to, I guess, ban everything outright, and someone had said Grover Beach was being proactive, and so he had called me and wanted to get a sense of where this, what the city council was pursuing and where the city was going. So I did that interview on Friday, and I don't know if I never saw it. I don't know if it aired or anything, so just to let you all know. Okay, I think with that, we don't have anything else. We don't have any closed session tonight, so we are adjourned.